Thursday. It is Throwback Thursday. Hashtag TBT. Any requests, send them in for today's musical request. DJ Honey Brown is not behind the board, but it is Roger Shergrill. So let Roger know, 650-650. What do you want to hear on today's broadcast? Canucks taking on the St. Louis Blues this evening. Now, what type of performance do we see? Is this going to be a throwback performance? Because we talk about the St. Louis Blues.
Just because it's on Thursday?
Well, that, but also the Blues. They kind of played, were they the old-time hockey team in the postseason last year? Not quite, I mean, because the game's changed so much, but they were a bigger physical team. And we talked about the Canucks trying to come together more. We saw the performance the other night against the Detroit Red Wings when it got a physical a little bit. And some of the things people have been saying is now a real test is coming up when the Canucks face a legitimate hockey team, a legitimate contender, a team coming off a Stanley Cup, and a team that can punch you right back in the face. Do we see some more physical, old-time, throwback type of hockey tonight, or are we just going to see two teams playing a early season game in October?
Are you calling for the Michael Ferland coming out party?
Yeah, no. Michael Ferland, get after it. No, not really. But just kind of posing the question, on a throwback Thursday type of day on our show, as we always do here, from 9 to noon, do we get a throwback type of performance this evening between two teams that can maybe bring a physical aspect?
Let's go with yes, because I think on this three-game winning streak here, one of the things that we'd say is the theme of it. Yes, there's some versatility that we were talking about yesterday, but I think the other part is a togetherness, a coming together for the team themselves, and winning does that, obviously. It's easier to preach a concept when you have successful results, but the 8-2 win, obviously, great for everyone to, you know, pad some stats. Detroit, we were talking about that physical aspect to it, that snarl. What was the word you were saying? Scuffling?
Scuffling as in like playing poorly. Teams that scuffle are teams that aren't playing well. But as far as like the physical aspect, do you have that?
They were kind of doing that.
Right.
There was some pushback. I know some people like to quote that as well. They had a little bit of snarl in Detroit. And I think in a matchup coming like this, this game probably means more to the Canucks than the Blues looking at Vancouver. Right, Blues are actually coming off the White House visit, right?
Mm-hmm.
Potentially in reflection mode, in celebratory mode, thinking, hey, we just accomplished something cool. First game back, it's not as if it's Dallas, one of our rivals. It's not as if it's Nashville, one of our rivals. It's Vancouver. Yeah, it's a Western Conference team. We could overlook this. You know, his team hasn't been in the playoffs in a bunch. We could overlook this one. So this game means a lot more to the Canucks than it does the Blues. And part of that is because when you're the champions, everyone's going to want to measure themselves against you.
So do the Blues have a White House hangover heading into this game? Is that kind of where we're going at? They just visited the White House on Tuesday. They were partying with the president, having a good time. No, I didn't see them get any fast food for this visit.
Was it, you know, hundreds and hundreds of burgers and Taco Bell laid out for them? Just like
that was for the college team.
Yeah,
wasn't
it was
like
Clemson
right? When they won the championship. Yeah, I'm not sure what kind of food they ate, but anyway, you know, they have maybe politics of White House on their mind. Are they going to come back and feel like, no, we just hung out at the White House. We're not really taking the Canucks all that seriously.
That's what I'm saying. Could you be distracted and still thinking about, you know, what you've accomplished and rather than what's ahead? Mm-hmm. And they're always going to be champions, but at some point you have to be focused on what's coming up in front of you. And coming up in front of you is Elias Pettersson, Quinn Hughes, Brock Besser, Bo Horvat, and all the problems they present.
Does Elias Pettersson bring back the feelings to Craig Binnington? Because he beat them out for the Calder, and then he beat him last time these two teams played. Elias Pettersson blew a goal by Jordan Binnington as well. What do we see there?
Impressive he did on Craig Binnington.
Well, Craig Binnington. That's going back in time just a little bit. But Jordan Binnington, last year, the story of the postseason.
Is this the Western Conference version of Besser versus Murray?
Ooh. See, at least he didn't say he got lucky, right?
No.
Like, I don't remember that happening.
Maybe in his mind, he's just thinking, Elias Pettersson, that guy got lucky.
Could you imagine? We see post-game after Elias Pettersson pumps a couple goals by Jordan Bennington. He's like, yeah, you know what?
All they called a trophy? I thought I should have won. I won a cup.
I, for one, am outraged.
The Bennington families and I, both Craig and myself, think he was a bit lucky.
But I do think that this game is going to be, in all seriousness, the toughest test the Canucks have had so far. Mm-hmm. And not that you can have any real strong takes on the team based on one game or six games into a hockey season. It is another test along the way, and we talk a lot about this. It's sometimes you win hockey games you play well in, and sometimes you lose games you play well in, and sometimes you win games you play poorly in. That's just kind of the way hockey goes. So what do I want to see against the St. Louis Blues? Do the Canucks deserve to win? Will they win? That will be determined. We'll find out over the next little while whether the Canucks will deserve to win the game or will they win the game. But can you play well enough that we can sit here tomorrow and say, yeah, you know what, they deserve to win the game. Or they deserved to be in that game. How well do you hang with a team that just won a Stanley Cup?
Okay, so what's a measure of success to you for this game? Even if they lose 4-3 and it's a competitive game?
Toe-to-toe. Can you go toe-to-toe? Yeah. Can you go toe-to-toe with one of the teams
now,
that are expected to be the best in the league?
Let's unpack toe-to-toe. Is it trade chances with them? Is it restrictive hockey? Is it however the game decides to get played? Because that's, again, one of the hallmarks of that homestand is it was kind of three different games.
And
it was open versus LA.
Sure.
It was kind of open against Detroit, and then they kind of put the clamps down. Philly was the other version. You had to play defense to win that game. And you don't want to do it every time, but they showed they can do that. The Blues are a really good team. If the Canucks have to clamp it up a bit and they come out victorious or it's a close game, do we look upon that and say, okay, whatever you tried to do, you executed it well?
See, it's difficult to process exactly how the style of the game is going to go. I mean, we assume it's going to be...
I'm just saying,
right,
if there's a scenario they play defensive...
Sure. Hey, I'm fine with a defensive hockey game as long as by the end of the game we can sit here and say, hey, did you outchance the opponent or were the chances pretty even? Basically, do not look out of place. Look like you can win this hockey game, because if you can and if you do well against a team like, say, the St. Louis Blues, then maybe we can sit here tomorrow, depending on what happens, and say, yeah, you beat the teams you're supposed to beat, like the Kings and the Red Wings, sure. But here was a test, and you deserved a better fate. Or here, you played a game that was worth winning. That's kind of the way I want to see it happen. Because it's difficult to predict how a game will flow, because it really depends on what happens in the game. But how well can you hang with a team that just won a Stanley Cup? That's what I want to see more than anything for tonight's game. And what I want to see, too, a stronger game from some key players on this team. We talk a lot about Ferland being better, and he does. Of course, he's got to be better. And this game might be better suited for him to have more of an physical impact. And we've talked about other players having to emerge in that bottom six, for instance. How does, you know, Virtanen keep playing? But you know who I want to see play a really strong game? Bo Horvat.
Mm-hmm.
That's a player I really want to see play a strong game. Because defensively, there has been... Every game, there's a couple of mistakes defensively and assignments he's missed.
We've mentioned his name a couple of times, and I think there's some, you know, growing sentiment in the fan base that says, you know, we should be talking about this kind of more. Because it's not just that those defensive lapses have happened, is they've led to goals, and that's when it gets heightened more.
So this game, defensively, against a team that will make you pay and can make you pay down low and spend more time at your own end because of how they cycle the puck and keep the puck in the offensive side of things, that is going to be a bigger challenge for a player like Bo Horvat, who is going to be getting some tougher matchups, is going to be facing the other team's top players, and you don't dictate last change on the road. So there will be times where he's going to have to really carry his line. 1 point in five games. I'm not too worried about the points. Yes, you want to see the points come. Sure, that's going to come over time.
In the past, and I think it's something we can talk about with Sean with, like in the past, he's been really good at chance creation.
Right.
So as an individual player, does a lot, and we know the production hasn't been there, but as far as creating chances 5-on-5, Bo Horvat's been pretty impressive.
Right.
The thing that's going to take him to the next step, and I think we're getting to a stage, you know, because of recency bias, people are... Well, you know, when's he going to make that O'Reilly jump, right? And he's going to face him tonight. That's important for him. When can you be a complete player?
Exactly. And part of being a complete player is being really good in your own end and how much overall value are you bringing. In a game like this, where the Blues will be hard to play against, I'm really keeping an eye on Bo Horvat. These are the types of games that Bo Horvat should be able to excel in.
Because they're quote-unquote tougher.
Tougher, and just the way Bo Horvat is built as a player. Mm-hmm. You know, he is a skilled guy. He's also a player that's not afraid to mix it up. He's not super physical. You know, he's not a guy that goes out there and trucks guys and always fights. But it's a game like this where his overall game should be able to be a benefit for the Canucks. And how does he play individually? So if I'm looking at one individual and who I want to see more of, that's one player I want to see more of tonight as far as key players for the Canucks go.
Interesting to note the Blues so far this season. Yes, they, you know, on the right side of the ledger, technically 3-1-2, 8 points on the season. Possession-wise, been okay. They've been kind of living off of their power play, which is top 12 in the league, I think, mm-hmm. Or top 10 in the league. You know, I don't think we should expect the post-February version of the Blues, but, you know, they themselves haven't exactly been living up to the Stanley Cup hype. And if their style of play is going to go a certain way, and we think, you know, grind it out to some degree, that's just kind of who they are. They've crafted their identity to some degree. Yeah, you're right. It plays into what the style of game Bo Horvat would probably want to play. Not necessarily trading chances, but can you emerge from a crowd to create chances?
Is it a bit of a fool's errand if you're trying to play St. Louis's game? Because St. Louis is very good at that. And the Canucks, we talk about them being adaptable. And yes, they've shown they can play more physical games. That grinded out down low performance against the Philadelphia Flyers was one to kind of look at. And Flyers are somewhat similar to the St. Louis Blues with how they're built. Similar, not exactly the same. Do you want to see them try to play that game? Or do they dictate their own style of play for tonight? And that means, can you use your speed? Can you use your skill? Can you get an advantage and an edge with that style of your game? Because Torgi and Langley makes this point on our 6 Subway text line, 650-650. I want to see the Canucks dictate the style they want to play, fast, hard, on the forecheck, put the pressure on them. And how the Canucks approach this game and how they play?
Well, here's my question. I'm not sure we know what the Canucks' style of play is. I think that's being developed. Mm. The Blues are that suffocating style. You know, we know how great Parayko and
there's a clear identity with how the Blues play game in and game out.
They're going to make you work to cross the blue line, let alone win board battles and all this stuff. The Canucks' style of play so far has been, to a degree, the opposition has dictated the style of the game, and the Canucks have executed that better. So just going back, the Philly game, Philly was pouring pressure on. Canucks said, okay, we can parry this and we'll create chances through it. They played a different style of game against Detroit. They've shown that like their identity is versatility. I still don't know if we know what their style of play is.
Like, what is the style you're going to see this team play on a consistent basis?
Yes.
Do we know that? Because we've seen different types of games.
I think we'll have that answer at game 47, but at game 6? I'm not sure we know what the style of play is. I think we have an ideal of what we each individually want it to look like.
Yeah,
some people want it to be that rough and tumble because there's Ferland, there's Roussel. Those guys will come back in the lineup, obviously. But
well, help us out figure out a word for how you would describe the Canucks 5 games in stylistically. Because the word you used yesterday was versatility. The word I used was adaptability. That's kind of the way I've seen this team play so far. They've adapted to what they're given on the ice.
But to me, that's more philosophical than it is like visual representation.
Right. Yeah, so what is the visual representation of this team? Do you have a word to describe what this team has been like 5 games in? And what is the word you want to describe this team as, say, 15, 20, 30, 40 games into the season?
Mm-hmm. 650-650 Subway text line. I encourage you to jump in and share your thoughts on just what you think the style of play of this team should be, and more so than just skilled.
Yeah.
It's
or fast.
Yeah. Paint us a word picture of what you think
you can
this
use more
be.
Than one word. If you want to use one word, go ahead. But if you want to use more words,
I think the version I want this team to look is cerebral. Mm-hmm. And that's just a fancy word of saying playing fast.
And smart.
Yeah.
Don't make
and
mistakes.
I think
don't play stupid hockey. Time,
yes. Kiss. It's that, and when you put JT Miller with Elias Pettersson, I think we've seen some short-term fireworks there, but that to me made sense when he was acquired. It's put smart players together, they figure it out, and I'm curious to see now that there's a host of defensemen that are hyper-intelligent as well, Quinn Hughes being the chief of them. And actually, I want to get to Quinn Hughes later on today, because that matchup, him versus the way the Blues defend the blue line. It's actually really interesting to me. It's cerebral.
Cerebral is the word that Bick will use. Antonio chimes in on our Subway text line. St. Louis just had to give the physical cup back, so it's no longer in their building. The math may actually be motivating to come out and Hulk smash a smaller team, but got to catch the Canucks first. Speed and skill could win out, as always. That is Antonio chiming in on a style of game. And Guilford Cole chimes in and says, 5 games in, hungry. Show
like
hunger.
That.
Be hungry.
I like that.
All right, we do have a caller on the line, 604-280-0650. It is Jordan and Victoria. And Jordan, you want to chime in about the style of play you want to see this Canucks team play?
Yeah, like my favorite team to watch is St. Louis. I think the style of play, they play that heavy style. Is the style I think you need to win. I think Pettersson and Hughes are great players, but I know it's Canucks Station, but I don't think they'll win with those guys. Mm-hmm. I just think the style of hockey is too physical, unless it's a special teams game, but 5-on-5, I think it's tough. But the one thing I will say about the Canucks, their top four is great and it's good. I would like to see a bit more pushback from Ferland and guys like that, and I don't think it's his issue. I just think how fast the game is and how fast it's scared. He just can't get there. So, it's just the style of how the NHL is now. I think those type of guys, it's tough. So he's trying, but I think he just can't get that physical.
Are you, Jordan, are you willing to just kind of wait it out to see with Ferlin, though? Because, look, we're still waiting on this illness thing. Once he's up to full speed, I think that's a bigger hindrance. Are we casting judgment already, or are we going to hang out and wait?
I think that's a good question. I'm a big Ferlin guy. I like tough hockey. I don't like soft hockey. I think that's how the game should be played. But saying that, where he is right now, we'll just give it some time. But I think it's just how the NHL is for big guys like that. What he's worried about how the game's played, if he's going to get a penalty for an open ice hit. There's probably a lot of things in his head where he feels 5 years ago he could do. Nowadays, he might think it's a penalty. So I think he's a little confused, to be honest.
But, hey, thanks for the phone call, Jordan. Appreciate your thoughts. And as far as Michael Ferland is concerned, too, he is a better skater than he's shown. This is the reason why I'm not concerned yet, and I don't think we've seen the best version of him, because he is a better skater. Like, Ferland, one of the things he has in his arsenal is being a good skater. He just has not shown it yet. And is that because he's lost a step? Is that because the game is faster? Or is it simply because he's not quite there yet physically? Because I don't see his get-up being where he needs to be.
We were talking about this yesterday, that his game is kind of predicated on power, right? Not necessarily just physical mashing a guy into the boards. Like, it's based on strength. How much force can he generate when he takes a stride? He's a powerful skater. He's got a heavy, powerful shot. And if whatever he's going through illness-wise, if you're just depleted, that's going to take away from your power. If he's going at 75-80% of his energy level, I'd be remiss to start saying, oh, this guy's not going to work out. I understand the idea of, is he playing scared? And I think that's part of it, because he's obviously had some concussion issues. I want to wait till we see the full version of Michael Ferland before we start calling him, okay, he's this and that and that. I think he's working through some stuff.
Yeah, haven't
right
seen
now.
Anywhere near with the best of what he can be. And certainly hope this is not what we're getting.
The vulture takes a swirling, though. Yes. I will say that. Just don't attack yet.
Yeah, it's six games in tonight. Mm-hmm. This will be game 6 for Michael Ferland. Where is his game at? And I know Amar chimed in about Michael Ferland on Twitter, and one of the things he says is going to be super physical. I'd like to see Ferland take some shifts with Petey, for instance. Do we see him move up in the top 6 again? And we saw him take some shifts with Horvat and Pearson at times. Do we see Ferland play a bigger role in this game because they want to have more size and bite on that line? We'll get to more of your responses
on Twitter.
Don't
break what's working.
The second line, though?
Put Ferland with Petey,
sure,
though.
That's because Miller's there. I mean, you have Miller already, but you can still put, I mean, Ferland can still play in the top 6. He might be able to move up. Do you play him, say, with Horvat and Pearson at times? Does that happen a bit more? Hot take to our Subway text line. Horvat scores 2 goals tonight. Ferland nets his first, and Edler goes +2. So there we go. We got some predictions in for tonight's game. We do have time for one more caller before we get out here, and it is a friend of the show, Detroit Brian. What do you want to chime in about here, buddy?
Yeah, I got 2 things to talk about, and if you're going to dig the wings, then I'm going to start in on the Browns.
Wait, wait, why are we digging the wings? We were just praising the wings to some degree. It's just, you know, like the other day.
It's all good. I was sitting beside some people at the game in New York, and we had a good chat about it, and I was like, the least I can say is they got more wins than the Canucks, I guess. But two things. One, I think that people misconstrue Ferland a little bit. And, like, really, if he scores one goal tonight, he's still on pace for 20. And this guy was hired, I think, and brought in to play a role. And it's based on the fact that they make the playoffs. So he can bring that element and that kind of player. And he even said so himself when you guys interview him, or he did an interview, that you can't bring that 100% of the time in the regular season and have your body hold out. Mm-hmm. So his value will come in the playoffs. He makes it. That other caller that was talking about how fast St. Louis is, they're one of the slowest teams in hockey, guys. I just can't even believe that they're saying that it's speed. It's their transition game from their defense to their forwards. And I think that it's kind of a little bit butt backwards. I don't know if I'm allowed to say ass in here, but it's...
Well, you just did, so...
I know. I told you. So it's a little... Jim Benning constructed it bottom six to defense and drafted forwards. And if you look at Edmonton, they're lacking their bottom six, and that's where they're going to have problems. And you guys can argue and debate over whether they paid too much for it, but they're balanced, and I think people should be excited. Mm-hmm. I think that this team is going to be pretty good. And Ferland, I think his role is going to be what it is. He's here for playoffs and playoffs only. If they don't make the playoffs, that sucks. But I don't know. I saw a lot of that game to be excited. And when your best players aren't playing and you're getting wins, that should be the biggest thing that you say yay for right there.
Right, no doubt. Hey, Brian, always appreciate your thoughts. That's Detroit Brian chiming in. And as far as the Canucks are concerned, he's right about Ferland. Just give it some time. And he was brought in to play a certain style. And we talked about this yesterday, too. No player who's big and physical is going to play all out 82 games. It's just not going to happen. There will be some downs and ups, especially for those big power forward types. His game hasn't gotten going yet. He nets one goal today or scores another one before the first 10 games or so are done. And he has, say, 2 goals in 10 games. All of a sudden, you're like, hey, well, you know.
Mm-hmm. You know, the point he was making is, like, if he's a 20-goal scorer, they go through slumps. And it's a really good point. We say this. It's you score 20 goals, there's 62 games you didn't score.
At least.
Yeah.
Because you might have a couple of games where you have multi-goals.
Yeah.
Multiple goals. So you're not, if you're a 20-goal scorer, there's at least 62 games you're not scoring goals.
So if you think Michael Ferland's going to score 20, there's 58 more to go.
Yes, there's a lot more to go. A lot of great reaction to our Subway text line. We'll get to more of those. Viking Stad, good friend of the show, is chiming in too and kind of echoes what Detroit Brian said to some degree. The word I use for the Canucks is complete. Right now, we're strong in all areas. We've been able to do everything, and I like to see what I want to see this team do so far. Is that a good word for this team so far? Or maybe the word is balance. Is a balance? Is a complete? How do you describe the Canucks and the way they've played so far and what you want to see from this team? We'll discuss this more. We'll talk about Quinn Hughes and the goalie who gets a second straight start. And this is a big test for him as well. We'll discuss right here on the home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
I always evaluated my teams at the 10-game mark and said, okay, what do we have? And that always included a road trip of more than, you know, one game. And so sometimes it would be 12 games or 14 games before we'd sit down and say, what do we have? So, but I would say at this point, an incomplete, but a really good incomplete. In other words, really trending the right way and really happy with certain, you know, developments that have happened. So goaltending's been really good. Specialty's been good. They're riding a good wave right now, so it's all good.
It is Throwback Thursday. Satyar Shah with Bic Nizar. Hashtag TBT. Get your requests in. Franz Ferdinand. I like that song. Well done, Raja. Go back a little bit in time.
NHL 2005?
Right.
Is that what it was?
Because
right, I remember it was the same... For whatever reason,
right.
It was on the NHL game and also Madden in the same year.
Really?
And it was alarming to hear it. Like, oh, which game am I actually playing?
I think that's like Freda, Greta Van Vliet this year.
They're on
NHL and MLB The Show.
Well, there we go.
Seabold yet to hook me up with NHL 20. So.
I know. We got to check that out. We have a lot of requests in our Subway text line. Andrew and Langley says, return of the Mac. Vikingstad says, hashtag TBT. This is... Please, this is it, please. Against all odds, Phil Collins, as I reminisce about the playbook RIP week. So we'll get that one in. Scott from Calgary. Maybe a bit heavy for a sports radio show, but one of my all-time favorites, Throwback Thursday request, the great gig in the sky, Pink Floyd. And I do like Pink Floyd a lot, so we will heed all those requests as the show goes
more
on.
More as they come in as well, 650-650. Yeah. We make it a competition to get in.
Yes. Yeah, so get in first, and then after that, Raja will decide which records will be spun right here on Sportsnet 650. We're going to be joined by John Shorthouse coming up in a few minutes to talk about the Vancouver Canucks. 5 games in tonight, taking on the defending Stanley Cup champion, St. Louis Blues. We're going to get back to a lot of your reaction on Twitter and also on our 650-650 Subway text line. But Quinn Hughes, you have a take on Quinn Hughes because you're curious about what we could see from Quinn tonight.
Yeah, not really a take. Just the thing I'm looking for tonight is how he enters the zone. We know he's so good at it, breaking out kind of a one-man zone entry. But going up against St. Louis, the thing they do really well, and Colton Parayko is a god at it, is defending the blue line. So it's going to be interesting to see how Quinn navigates the neutral zone to create offense. And this is going to be an interesting challenge. Is O'Reilly going to be the one that's tasked with, you know, being aware of Quinn Hughes? Is it going to be Shen, Bose, whatever center? But that grouping with the centerman and Parayko, Petrangelo, I think is really sharp as well. Who's ever responsible for that? Quinn Hughes is going to have a difficult matchup than I think the previous 5 have presented in this particular game. And let's see how he, you know, outsmarts the opposition.
How much of an easy time, how difficult a time will he have getting out of his own zone when you have guys like Ryan O'Reilly, you have Braden Shen, you have those bigger forwards trying to hem you in, and they will put more pressure on the puck carrier as well, trying to get out. So for Quinn Hughes, how does he beat the forecheck, and also how does he gain zone entry, to your point? You have guys like Colton Parayko, Petrangelo, trying to, you know, they step up on the blue line a lot to try to take that away a lot.
Forecheck, I'm not as concerned about. I think the way I view it, the Blues are great in numbers, but in physicality, as far as like speed, I don't know if they're there. So Quinn can excel in that regard. And I think the previous caller, Detroit Brian, was trying to call out Jordan. Just the idea of they're not fast physically. Okay, maybe not, but I think the way they play is fast, and I think that's what Jordan was kind of alluding to. Just that, you know, they're a fast team in style of play because of how they transition the puck.
We always talk about this too. Sometimes if you don't have the speed, can you play fast? At least can you move the puck quickly?
So I think Quinn physically, man to man versus, you know, the Fabry Steens of the world, I think he can elude those guys. And as far as how he enters the zone, that's what I'm most excited for.
One of the things that's come up too, people ask, how have the Canucks fared against teams coming off Stanley Cup victories? This unsigned text says, Canucks are 2-4 against defending Cup champs in the 3 previous seasons. 2 wins were against the Penguins. Do you look at that record? Because I know Vikings Dad asked you a question too, but what is the Canucks record in recent years against the St. Louis Blues?
Yeah, I just went back a handful of years here. It's 3-6.
Against the St. Louis Blues. Mm-hmm.
So the Vikings Dad's memory of victorious nights against the Blues is a bit short.
We'll get back to a lot of this conversation. There's a lot of good comments on our Subway text line, also on Twitter as well. But we do have good friend of the show on the line, the voice of the Vancouver Canucks on Sportsnet Pacific, alongside John Garrett. It is Shorty, John Shorthouse. Shorty, what's up? What's up, man? How's St. Louis treating you?
Well, I'm just watching practice. So there you go. Morning skate. Canucks are on the ice. And looking forward to this matchup tonight, I think. It's a team that's brimming with confidence against a team that has nothing to prove because the Blues have a banner right above me now, and they're in a pretty good frame themselves, having just gone to visit the White House.
Well, how strange is it to see the Blues have a Stanley Cup banner? Because for so many years, I mean, it was always, you know, a sad team like the Blues. They never get it done when they need to. They've been to the Cup Final in the 70s and never got the ultimate goal of winning the Stanley Cup, and now they have a Stanley. Does that give, you know, Canucks fans more hope that if a team like the Blues that never won anything finally won one, that maybe it can happen for Vancouver one day?
It should. You know, the Blues, like you mentioned, I mean, they have their opportunities came early.
Yeah.
Like, right off the hop. And so, back then, you know, the fan base, and obviously, it's generations have gone by, multiple generations since then. But you know, the early fan base probably thought, oh, okay, this is going to be a routine thing. And then you realize just how hard it is and how futile it can be. And, you know, the Canucks in their history going to three finals and not sealing the deal, you start to wonder if it's ever going to happen. And it just changes the entire conversation and the entire dynamic. You know, if the Canucks had done what they should have done in 2011, it just changes everything. You know, it's, okay, we've got one. it's the same way, I felt the same way about the Seahawks, mm-hmm. you know, and their disappointment in losing that Super Bowl in Detroit, but finally winning one. And it's like, you can't take it away from it. It's always going to be yours. And, gosh, I hope the Canucks find a way to do it someday, because it's just such a euphoric feeling. You talk to the players and the management and the coaches of the Blues, and you know, they're still over the moon with what transpired for them last spring.
We can hear practice in the background there, John, and just taking a look at the lineup, doesn't look like any changes. Pearson, Horvat, Levo together. What have you noticed in Bo Horvat's game here through the first handful of games?
Well, that would be the only change, probably, because that line was Ferland, Horvat, Pearson last game, was it not? So that would be the one change. Who did you ask me about?
Bo.
Oh, I like his game. I think there's a little less pressure on him now. I think he has freedom to think more offensively a little bit, because he isn't being tasked. He took 2018 faceoffs last year. Think about that. I mean, 2018 faceoff. He took any draw that mattered, particularly in, you know, in the time when Beagle and Sutter were out. Now he's got a little more freedom. I loved his work on the power play the other night. I loved that replay we had of him basically telling JT Miller telepathically, don't hit me. But, you know, you can see him kind of close his eyes and clench his teeth as that shot was going. But a perfect screen. And if you have players willing to do that, to pay the price. And, you know, it's one thing to be in front, but you see so many guys cheat. And the goalie still gets a look at the shot. The goalie the other night, Jonathan Bernier, had no chance. There's no way he could pick up that puck, because Horvat planted himself in front. He didn't cheat and get off to the side and go for a little tip-in. That's the sort of thing you need, as you guys might refer to it, the little things. And Bo does them very well.
Okay, you mentioned how this team is growing in confidence, and obviously they're growing in skill. You're watching practice. One of the things I like to watch is just like how practice is run, and especially when you have a team that's growing in skill. Do you feel it's like a more professional group, a more professional practice from years that you've watched here recently?
No. No, but I think that...
No, I simply mean, like, do things run crisper, and do you see a translation from things that you see here to... game time?
No, I don't. But I'll tell you, what you look for is, and you can hear it in the background, is chatter.
Right.
And you know, this team is feeling good about itself. It could easily be 4-1, because I thought the Canucks played a really good game in Edmonton in their opener and probably deserved a better fate. They weren't good in Calgary, and they've been pretty good since. So this is as confident as the team has been in quite some time. I mean, I know they had the 4-0 start a few years ago, but do you remember that 4-0 start when they didn't have the lead in the first three games?
Yeah.
Once,
yeah.
Never led, and won the first three, and then they found a way to beat Buffalo, I think, for the 4-0 start. But that was different. Like, this team does feel good about itself. It knows that it is deeper, that it is more skilled, it's faster, it's bigger, it's everything. The only issue, if you're going to say potentially, is the absence of Jacob Markstrom. But Thatcher Demko, in his last four starts dating back to last year, has been dynamite. I can't remember the shot total from two nights ago, but heading into that game against Detroit, in which he only gave up one goal, and it came early, but he had stopped 104 of the last 110 shots he faced in his last three starts last year.
Mm-hmm.
And he picked up right where he left off in that game against the Red Wings. And for him to be able to shake off that Dylan Larkin goal and perform as well as he did, I think is a great sign. And it's going to make everybody breathe easier knowing that they can still win games when Jacob Markstrom's unavailable.
and it goes back to that word confidence, Jordy, because when and Thatcher talked about this a bit after the game as well the other night, and he said, yeah, maybe last year, you know, we didn't feel like we could win every game. This year, we feel like we have a chance in every game. Even if you, say, fall behind early, there is the thought of, okay, we have guys who can score, because you look at JT Miller, he was at it. You look at Tyler Myers, Quinn Hughes, and even Michael Ferland, who hasn't gotten going yet. And you see the level of play be far higher. I know you and I always talk about, you know, you're watching the puck more than anything, but we can just tell the ice is a lot more evenly tilted with this team, what we've seen so far, and how much of that has contributed to guys like JT Miller and Tyler Myers, two veterans who have been really worth everything they've been given up to acquire so far.
Oh, for sure. I have been pleasantly, I don't want to say surprised, but it's just been a pleasant development that both of them have played so well. And JT Miller is, I don't know why I didn't realize what a presence he is. I guess I just didn't see him enough because he was playing in the East. Basically, all I remembered about JT Miller was him scoring an overtime goal against Ryan Miller at Madison Square Garden. But he is bigger than I thought he was. He is more skilled than I probably realized he was. And he's been a nice fit and an upgrade. That's the thing. You know, in the evolution of a team, as it moves along and tries to be more competitive, it's deeper. And you improve incrementally. But what they've done here is improved in two areas in which they were lacking, one of which is speed and the other, which is size, and skill obviously would be the third one. But it's a more skilled team. And to your point, and you look at a team like the Edmonton Oilers, which has very high top end skill, you know, for them to go 5-0 out of the gate, having trailed in every game, that's sort of what you're talking about with the Canucks. They're not going to be out of it. They're going to be in games because they can come back and they can outskill teams, in certain situations. And that's a nice feeling to have.
Talking to John Shorthouse, one of the voices of your Vancouver Canucks on Sportsnet, here with Sat Shaw, myself, Big Nazar, on the playbook. John, you've had the luxury of watching a lot of good players come up from years gone by. Besser, Patterson, where does Quinn Hughes rank in rookie years for you?
It's early, but he is a commodity and a type of player that the Canucks haven't really ever had, and that's exciting. And he's only going to get better, and he's already really good. So Darren Pang today was reminiscing about the game last year. I guess it was the last game of the season, and how eventually the Blues won it in a shootout, I believe, but how in overtime Travis Green threw out Hughes with Besser and Pettersson, and the Blues never saw the puck for a minute and a half. He's going to be fun to watch. And I'm old enough, we talked about this in Victoria, I think, Sad, but I'm old enough to remember Paul Reinhart, who had a brief stint with the Canucks and was instrumental in that 89 team that went to overtime in Game 7 against the Calgary Flames and almost won it. The chances to Stan Smeal and Petri Strico and Tony Tanti. People don't want to relive that one, probably. But Paul Reinhart was that kind of player. And the Canucks really haven't had one. They've had guys who are good offensively, Alex Edler, Christian Ehrhoff, Sammy Salo, but not with the skill set and the dynamic possibilities that I think Quinn Hughes possesses.
Well, the skating is absolutely incredible, and we haven't seen anybody skate like that on the Canucks blue line, and I mean, I can't remember it, and Paul Reinhart was incredibly talented as well. So, you know, Quinn Hughes is probably the single most talented Canucks blue liner prospect-wise they've ever had. Will he live up to it all? That remains to be seen. But you and John Garrett are back on the road again. I know you guys were in Banff. You were in Alberta early in the season. But
I didn't go to Banff.
You didn't go to Banff. That's right. You didn't go to Banff. That's right. That's right. Sorry.
I wasn't allowed to do those games.
No, that's right. I totally got it mixed up. But now you're on the road with John Garrett. And, you know, Cheech has been pretty quiet about, you know, the food and stuff on the TV broadcast so far. So what are you guys doing for lunch today?
Today, I'm not. Actually, I think I'm going to be healthy today.
Oh.
There's a supermarket on the walk back, and I think Murph and I are going to go to the deli there. But last night, in a power move, like right out of the John Garrett eating playbook, we went to a place that was pretty much named after him because it was called Big Daddy's. And it was the amount, I know we talk about ketchup a lot, but I did take a picture. I should have sent it to you. But the amount of ketchup he put on top of his cheese bacon fries was sensational. Like, it was half a bottle of ketchup. It had to be. It was crazy. And I think he polished it off with some boneless wings.
Wow.
Yeah.
So he's,
and there might have been a Coors Light involved.
So he is in mid-season form then.
Oh, he's in mid-season form. Yeah, he forgot his hat at Big Daddy's.
Well, I'm sure there's a return trip to retrieve the hat coming.
Yeah, you got it.
We'll get a recap of the lunch because we're going to be talking to John Garrett on Canucks Central at noon a bit later as well. So we'll get his take on what food he has.
I think he's probably going to Subway, which is his version of healthy.
Mm-hmm.
And he'll probably, if he goes to Subway, we are like an old married couple. I know his habits. He's going to have ham and cheese, extra cheese, mustard, mayo, no veggies.
I don't know how one man can consume so much cheese and ketchup and still be in good shape. That's the thing that blows me away about John Garrett. It is.
Did you just say he's in good shape?
Yeah, well, relatively speaking.
He's on this side of the ground. But
I'm trying to be nice, okay? I'm trying to be nice.
Well, that's a shape.
It's like, he has a shape, exactly.
It's like Pierre Dorian. It's like we have a shape.
Yeah.
We have a shape. We have a shape. And we have a guest, and he is John Shorthouse. We appreciate your time, Shorty.
No worries, boys.
All right. Talk again soon, my friend. That's John Shorthouse, and make sure to watch him on the Sportsnet Pacific broadcast for Canucks games. And John Garrett will join us on Canucks Central at noon. What, 12:30? Is that correct, or is it 12:05?
12:30 sounds right.
12:30, all right. I'm glad I'm prepared when I tease my guests on.
That's during Canuck Central.
During Canuck Central, that's coming up with myself and Bick Nizar. I am Satyar Shah. And we are going to get to more Canucks talk and hockey talk throughout the show. We will be joined by Mark Schofield coming up at 10 to talk about the NFL, a Thursday night game, and what to look forward to in Week 7 of the NFL. We'll look back at the best throw of Week 6 in the NFL. We're going to be talking some more underlying numbers as well with Sean Tierney coming up. I always like talking to Sean. We'll dig into Quinn Hughes specifically. And one of the things you want to talk about is the level of scoring chances Bo Horvat is generating so far.
Mm-hmm. Because generally speaking, through his career, especially in the last 2-3 years as he's emerged now, really good at generating chances 5-on-5. Needs to be better at converting some of these chances. But as far as as an individual, not necessarily as a line, but as an individual, Bo Horvat is pretty good at creating offensive chances. One of the issues, though, has been obviously finishing those.
Yeah.
But also, he's on the receiving end of chances as well. That's something he's going to have to clean up. And it's something that we want to see as part of his evolution of becoming a more total and complete player, is he's able to, you know, be kind of a boa constrictor, right? Like, put the clamps down on teams and be able to thrive and just have a greater impact on a game. That's an element that when he was coming out of junior, it was like, he's a defensive guy. You're drafting him rather high for a defensive guy that maybe he hones out his offensive game, and it's completely flipped.
It's been the opposite.
Yeah.
And now the other side of the game, how does that kind of emerge and develop over the next little while? Bo Horvat, however, according to John Shorthouse, he's happy with the way he's played, especially on the net front, because he has been used as a screen. So on that side of things, he has created. And that's why, as far as points go, I'm not concerned about the lack of production there. All I want to see is process be better defensively. If that gets better for Bo, then how often do we talk about this? Sure, you want guys to score points, but you can be a 55-point guy, 25-goal guy, and be far more valuable than a guy who scores 30 goals and gets 60 points or 65 points because you bring so much more defensive value to the table. You do so many other things that help your team be a lot better. It's not just about the point total. So I'm not too worried about points for Bo Horvat. There has to be a baseline he has to meet. Like, if he gets less than 20 goals and less than 50 points, that's concerning. You don't want that to happen. But if he's in that 20 goals, 50 point range, but brings you higher end defensive value, guess what? That's better than just putting up pure points sometimes.
And just to give you an indication, if we just go through the skaters right now on the Canucks team, actually more specifically the forwards, just based on some metrics as far as who's giving up the most scoring chances, it's Brandon Sutter, Tanner Pearson, Gaudette, and Bo. Mm-hmm. And now look, Sutter's the highlight of it.
More degree of difficulty of who you're facing as well.
And
plays
also,
a part
he's giving up a significant amount just because Bo's fourth there.
Right.
Doesn't mean it's so close. There is quite a gap between the two, but fourth on the team, mm-hmm. right? And this is a guy that you're looking at to be kind of the responsible two-way player that just hasn't come up there.
And it's also small sample, so sometimes through five games, it's like, okay, it's fun with small sample sizes. But it's true. It's one of the things, it's a trend so far that you have to keep an eye on. Can it get better? I do think it can, and it's only a matter of time before it gets there.
What is making you laugh? 650 Subway text line.
I like this.
Did you guys just come up with another nickname for Bo? The Boa Constrictor.
The Boa Constrictor.
That was a happy accident. I did not intend
happy
that at
accident.
All.
What is a happy accident?
Just like you stumble upon something. Happenstance? you know, like a eureka discovery. Just like I stumbled into something. Wasn't, I don't know, what was the great scientific discovery that was an accident?
Wasn't fire an accident, pretty much? That's how they discovered how fire happens? It was just like a, I don't know.
I have no idea.
Some caveman.
Was penicillin by accident?
I don't know, man. Now you're really challenging my historical knowledge.
Conversation.
Like there is a really important scientific discovery that was like a total accident. I can't remember what it is. I want to say it's penicillin, but
well, let us know what is a scientific happy accident. I mean, we clearly don't know. So at least educate us for once.
A happy accident is like Bob Ross painting. He's like, oh, and if you ever make a mistake, it's just a happy accident.
That's right. Yeah, antibiotics apparently.
Yeah. Oh, okay, that's probably it.
Placing the crown in the bathtub was the original eureka moment.
I can't read this one from RJ and Killarney.
Why not?
I'll show it to you after.
Fine.
And then we can decide if it's airworthy.
Oh, this has to get checked before we share it.
Well, I don't want to just say it in case it's... I'll run it by you. And I'm like, yeah, that's fine.
Yeah. I was going to make a number of different jokes. Oh, you know what? We will put a memorandum on that, or moratorium on that for a second, and then we'll issue a memorandum. How about that?
Fine. Serendipitous.
Serendipitous.
Joey Richmond.
All right. We'll get back to a lot of these comments. Also, some NFL talk, and there's the NBA in town again. Do you have $3 billion to fork over? We'll discuss right here on the home of Vancouver Hockey, Sportsnet 650. Throwback Thursday, hashtag TBT by request from Andrew and Langley. Return of the Mac. Satyar Shah with Bik Nizar. Raja Shagril on the board. If you want to text in your submission, 650-650 Subway text line. You can even call in and speak to DJ Raj, 604-280-0650. We got to come up with a different DJ name for Raja.
Yeah.
DJ Raj doesn't quite work.
We'll work on it by the end of the show.
Can we accidentally come on to a good name for you?
Raja Shagril.
Today, I am requiring your help. Yeah. So let us know, because we were talking about accidents. And we mentioned happy accidents. And I completely forgot about Bob Ross.
Yeah.
And our good friend Gordy Locke on Twitter chimed in and says, how the hell do you guys not know the phrase happy accident?
I know.
You know. I forgot.
I think Gordy. Or I think you forgot.
No,
Gordy,
I totally forgot.
Sure.
I 100% forgot. I mean, we, yes.
Thanks for the text that came in. Penicillin was an accident. Vic from Trail in BC.
Yeah.
I thought it was because I'm allergic to penicillin.
You are?
Yeah.
Huh. Well, how many other allergies do you have?
Literally the only one. Found out the hard way.
Wow. What happened? How'd you find out?
Like,
were you
in hospital as a kid? And they're like, penicillin will be fine.
Ooh.
Super did not react well.
Dang. So what happened?
Like,
what's your reaction to a penicillin?
Again, I was
allergy?
Pretty young, but as far as I was told, slipped to a pretty dark place.
Ooh, not good.
It got pretty bad.
Wow.
But recovered.
Dicey.
And have a, I was going to say healthy body, but. yeah. Oliver in Surrey also says the first antibiotic penicillin, the first antibiotic was discovered by accident around the edge of lab bacteria samples. Post-it notes were also an accidental invention. And yeah.
Yeah, post-it notes. A 3M employee was trying to create a super glue and instead created a re-stickable adhesive. Boom, post-it notes everywhere.
Engineer Russ. A lot of scientific discoveries are, quote-unquote, accidents. Most of them happen because something odd happens in a different experiment.
There was a few that came in that you did not feel comfortable reading.
I just wasn't sure. We'll read this one here, then.
No, we should read it. I mean, this one says Viagra was an accident, boys.
Apparently it was a heart medication attempt.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
What? You know what? You know what was inappropriate? That drop was inappropriate. The text was fine, Roger.
We were just sharing information. You had to go make it creepy, man.
This one says, the Wonder Bra is the happiest accident of them all.
That's fair.
I suppose so. I mean, I wouldn't know. Did I have another geeky, dorky laugh at some point during the Shorty interview?
Because Lee Fan Steve,
yeah, I do. You know, I'm a dork anyways. Yeah. But Lee Fan Steve says, can we get a playback on Sat's laugh after Shorty said Big Daddies?
It wasn't any different than your normal laugh, mm-hmm. at least if I recall it that way.
Ooh, man. I love this text. Slipped into a dark place, so you were briefly a Browns fan? Oh my God.
Shots I don't fired. Think I've ever... briefly been a Browns fan.
I don't think you...
I've briefly been a Cowboys fan.
What?
Like, as a child.
What is wrong with
as
you?
As a child. They were as the only ones on TV.
So you were briefly a Cowboys fan? Yeah. What was the brief team you had on afterwards?
That was about it, actually. And then, obviously, my... I was actually briefly a Bills fan, too.
Oh, that's where the Bills hype is coming
from.
Well,
because Doug Flutie.
Oh, yeah, Doug.
So I stand.
Yeah, you're team short players. Totally. You love short quarterbacks, short hockey players.
Yeah, I'm team diminutive athletes. It's not my fault they have better center of gravity, and it's really, really important.
We're going to have some fun talking to Mark Schofield, and we're going to do our QB panic index a bit mm-hmm. later on. But, I mean, are we seeing a situation where Rob Johnson is taking over for Doug Flutie with the Bills again? Is that what we're seeing?
What, for Josh Allen? Josh Allen's fine.
No, not with the Bills. I'm just joking around. What situation do we see that wrong
resembles
move?
That one?
I mean, because you see Ryan Tannehill is taking over from Marcus Mariota.
Oh, goodness.
By the way, we had the over-under on how long will it take before Tannehill takes over from Mariota. I don't remember what we chose. Was it week six?
I think it was 7.5.
Yeah, it was something like that, right?
Yeah. And also, we sat here, what, 3 weeks ago? Is Marcus Mariota back? He had that great throw, and it was Mark's throw of the week, and do you buy more stock? And it was like, let's just wait it out, and here we are.
You know what? Let's bring in Mark Schofield into the conversation. The hardest working man in NFL media. Follow him on Twitter, at Mark Schofield, Inside the Pylon. Also, the Pat's Pulpit Sco Show that you don't want to miss as well. Mark, always a pleasure. How are you?
I'm doing well, Sat and Beck. Great to be with you guys. Excited to talk a little. Week 6 and Week 7 football here, as we do most Thursdays.
Well, absolutely. And we were just kind of having some fun with, the quarterback panic index. And Bick revealed that for a brief moment, he was a Buffalo Bills fan. So I'm like, what situation here could resemble Rob Johnson taking over for Doug Flutie, who people here in Canada were incensed about when it happened many years ago now? Is that a similar situation with what's happening in Tennessee or maybe even in Miami, but, you know, with Ryan Fitzpatrick taking over from Josh or Carolina? What situation could be the wrong move as far as a quarterback change goes?
I mean, I'm struggling with the move down in Miami in a sense, because they still need to figure out what they have in Josh Rosen. The closer we get to the next draft class, the more and more it looks like this draft class coming out, this next group of quarterbacks, is going to be a good quarterback class. And the more and more it looks like Miami's going to be near the top of the draft board next year with a potential to pick one of these next guys, they need to figure out what they have in Rosen. Now, maybe they've already come to that determination, but it does seem like, you know, we're a couple of weeks removed from him being named the starter and from Brian Flores saying that he's going to be the guy and they're going to roll out with him. And now, you know, they pull him. And what even complicates the situation is when you look at how Ryan Fitzpatrick did when he came in against the Washington defense that was playing basically prevent coverage, soft coverage. So people think, oh, well, look, Fitzpatrick played great. Obviously, he's the guy. But I think that sort of clouds how the two quarterbacks fared last week. And so I'm struggling with my Miami decision, but at the same time, I have to be honest, Rosen was my top quarterback in that class. So there's a part of me that just wants to be right about that. And so I'd like to see him get better opportunities to show what he can do. But the Miami situation is one I'm struggling with, because they have to figure out what they have in Josh Rosen before we get to the next quarterback class.
Well, that's the biggest question I have as well when it comes to Josh Rosen. Is he simply not good enough, or has he been mishandled by two organizations back-to-back that don't quite know what they want, or at least didn't know what they wanted in Arizona, and right now trying to figure that out in Miami? But that's a long conversation on two teams trying to figure out their place in the NFL yet again. But as far as last week in the NFL goes, one of the things we love talking to you about, Mark, is what was your favorite throw of week 6 of NFL action?
Well, I mean, it's an interesting little transition here, but I'm going to talk about Kyler Murray for a moment because I've been studying Kyler Murray over the course of the season and seeing how he's faring as a rookie and that, you know, Cliff Kingsbury offense. And one of the areas that I wanted to focus on while watching him this year was anticipation. I talk about it a ton with you guys. It's one of those areas where you can see the game sort of, you know, the quarterback's mind getting sped up and the game's not too fast for him. And if you look back at some of the reads and throws that Kyler had been making in the first couple of weeks of the season, you could see him struggling with anticipation throws and not getting the ball out when he could or when he should. But he had a throw last week. And now, look, I get it. You know, generic Atlanta Falcons opponent quarterback is a top five quarterback in the league right now. You know, quarterbacks have been carving up the Atlanta defense. But he had a throw on a deep out route to Larry Fitzgerald, where he wasn't quite sure of the coverage when the ball was snapped. He identified what the coverage was. It was a cover three scheme once the ball was snapped. And he gets this ball out of his hands well before Fitzgerald is even thinking about making his break. And so the anticipation is great. But even beyond that, I love where he puts this throw because he knows that there's an underneath flat defender in the flat near the sideline that's kind of lurking that can make a play on the football. And if he sort of leads Fitzgerald a bit towards the boundary, he's going to bring that underneath flat defender into play, and he could lead his receiver into trouble. And we talk so much about how quarterbacks need to protect their receivers, and so what he does is makes this anticipation throw, but he puts it low and sort of short, so Fitzgerald has to go to the turf to make the catch, and it prevents that underneath defender from sort of making a play on the ball or the body. So from the anticipation to protecting his guy, I loved that throw from Kyler Murray.
Is there a trait or something you notice in rookie QBs in their first year that you say, okay, now this guy is getting it? Is it just timing? Is it anticipation? Is it pocket? Is there something that you look for in rookie QBs?
Yeah, Bick. It's the anticipation factor. And, you know, when we go back to, say, Jared Goff in his second year, you know, obviously the first year with Sean McVay, you know, there was a throw that he had against Dallas on a running back seam route to Todd Gurley where, similar to what I was just talking about, he gets it out with anticipation. You can tell that his mind is starting to sort of get on the same page with everything. He's starting to figure it out. The game's not too fast for him. So I really sort of look for these anticipation throws because that's when you know if the quarterback is confident in what he's seeing. He trusts what his eyes are telling him in the defense. He's not waiting to see the guy come open. And we all know that if the receiver sees the quarterback throw the ball, if the receiver sees the ball come out of that QB's hands, it's too late because the defenders can see that too. And so you have to make anticipation throws, and that's something I always look for when studying younger QBs.
There's a game tonight, Thursday Night Football, Mahomes and Flacco. I actually want to focus on Joe Flacco, which is strange. I know the MVP in the game. But has he been okay to you? Because the way I look at it, he's – not the same Joe Flacco we saw for the previous 3 years. It's kind of what we saw before all of that. To me, he's been just good enough that he's not kind of submarining their team. I know some metrics say his QBR is actually doing pretty good so far this year.
Yeah, I mean, I actually just studied his game from last week against Tennessee last night, and while obviously I wasn't sort of blown away by what they're doing conceptually as an offense, I wasn't really blown away by his level of play. He's doing enough in the structure of their offense to sort of keep them on schedule, to keep their offense moving. They involve the running game. They rely on the run game a lot with Lindsey and others. And so you can see this Denver team starting to get a little bit better overall. The defense is playing a little bit better. Their offense is playing a little bit better. And this is a very interesting game tonight because you have Kansas City coming to Denver, coming off of two losses at home, and we know that generally on these short week situations, they tend to favor the home team because the other team has to travel. We've seen, you know, visiting teams struggle sometimes in these games on the road. You know, we saw it with Tennessee a couple of weeks ago. We saw it with the Giants last night, even though they hung tough. I mean, even though they hung tough in the first half. There's a potential we're talking about the 4-3 Chiefs and the 3-4 Denver Broncos tomorrow morning. I don't think it's outside the realm of possibility. But I think Flacco's been good enough, and with the way that team is trending, Denver might make a little bit of noise in that division. Not saying they come out winning outright, but they can make this interesting, as we've seen some teams like the Chargers, for example, start to fade.
being just good enough, that's something I've been saying about 49ers QB Jimmy Garoppolo. I'm taking a lot of heat, Mark, here in this area from 49ers fans because, look, I haven't been impressed by Jimmy Garoppolo. But to you, is he doing just enough? Is he also working within the structure of the offense? And is there more to come from him?
You know, I think there still could be some more to come from him because let's remember, you know, we've seen this with quarterbacks coming off that knee injury in the past where at the start of the season, you know, we saw it with Watson last year and Wentz last year. You sort of have that, you know, uncertainty about your lower body. And so, you know, we're seeing Garoppolo work through that part of the recovery process where he's doing enough inside the structure of the offense right now. Kyle Shanahan is doing some great things schematically, you know, throwing out a 21 personnel and the like to keep defenses guessing. And so it's worked for them, obviously, to this point. I think there's more to come from Garoppolo as he starts to get that level of comfort back in his lower body. He can drive the ball a bit more. He can step into throws a bit more and really feel comfortable about that throw-in base, which is so critical to a quarterback's level of play. And so I've been impressed with what Shanahan has been doing. I think Garoppolo is doing a good job within that offense right now. And I expect him to get a little bit better offensively as the weeks roll on.
Well, one quarterback that has been taking heat the last few years has been Matthew Stafford with the Detroit Lions. Daryl Bevel and how that offense has been clicking, and Stafford is playing the most efficient football he's played in a very long time. Are we seeing a new and improved Matthew Stafford, and how much of this should be directed to Daryl Bevel, the OC who took a lot of heat here in Seattle in the past?
Yes, it's a fun offense to watch. And mm-hmm. You know, I said I was studying Flacco last night. I watched that Lions offense against Green Bay again last night, and they do so much interesting stuff in the vertical sort of passing game. They really let Stafford push the ball downfield. I mean, look, they open up with a flea flicker on the first play from scrimmage, and you got to love that. So I think Bevel deserves a lot of credit for tapping into what Stafford perhaps does best as a quarterback. And it's interesting because, you know, when they sort of, after the Calvin Johnson retirement, and they different offensive coordinators sort of had Matthew Stafford sort of dial it back a bit and perhaps play a little bit more ball control and check it down a bit more. You know, I think there were times when Stafford might have been a better quarterback, generally speaking, but playing to a quarterback's strengths is what these offensive coordinators need to be doing. We know Stafford has the arm talent and the ability to make throws downfield and to be a danger in the vertical passing game. And so tapping into that part of the playbook, I think, has been great for Stafford. You know, it was frustrating, you know, watching that game again and then watching it on Monday night, of course, when they couldn't finish drives with points, that's, you know, with touchdowns. They had to settle for field goals. That came back to bite them, as well as some, you know, interesting calls from the referees. But they need to start finishing drives with touchdowns. I like the way they're calling these plays. I like how they're using Stafford. It's a nice resurgence from him, but I want to see them start finishing drives with touchdowns instead of field goals.
Well, and the team they're taking on this week is the Minnesota Vikings. And last week, Kirk Cousins went off. Finally, he had a week he went off, and Stephon Diggs got involved in the offense as well. Are they figuring it out on the offensive side of things, using Kirk Cousins more, getting more passes downfield? Or is this also still an offense you kind of look and say some chunk plays that were made with some shorter throws that went big?
I mean, I think it's a mix of the two. I think that we saw what this offense could be last week. We saw how this Vikings offense could be dangerous when, you know, Cousins maybe takes the brakes off a little bit and attempts some vertical throws, some shot plays down the field. But at the same time, this Eagles defense is struggling. I mean, let's not forget, it was back in week one, but it looked like Case Keenum and Washington were going to have a fantastic offense because they had a lead at halftime. They were hitting on shot plays down the field. The Eagles defense is struggling. So I do attribute a lot of what we saw from Minnesota last week to the defensive side of the ball in Philadelphia, and they've got to figure it out, obviously, with a big game coming up Sunday night. But I do think that we did get a taste of what Minnesota could be offensively, and I'd like to see more of this side of Kirk Cousins for Minnesota going forward.
Can't believe we're already in week 7, Mark, but we always like to look ahead here. What quarterback matchup are you most interested coming up this week? QB versus QB, QB versus defense, what's catching your eye?
I mean, there are a number of games, you know, each week that catch my eye. I mean, the Monday Nighter is interesting because I'm very curious to see how, you know, mono-free Sammy D looks against this Patriots defense, which has done so well this season. You know, another game I'm excited to see, honestly, is Arizona and New York. You know, we get Kyler Murray and Daniel Jones, two guys picked in the top 10. But I just sort of alluded to, the biggest game of the week, which is that Sunday Nighter, Philadelphia and Dallas. Both these teams had such high hopes coming into the season. People were saying that both of these teams had complete rosters up and down. But they've struggled in past weeks, and now they're both 3-3. They've let the Giants back into the conversation in the NFC East, which is mind-boggling if you think about it. And one of these, this kind of might be a must-win situation. And of course, we get the Dak versus Wentz discussion, which has been dominating Twitter basically since those guys were in the draft class together. And so you put that all together, that's going to be a huge one on Sunday night.
Mark, it's always a pleasure chatting with you. Follow him on Twitter at Mark Schofield, Inside the Pylon, The Skull Show on the Pat's Pulpit. Always a pleasure, my friend, and we look forward to chatting with you again next week as well. And I know, Mark, this hasn't been an easy week for us here on Sports and 650. There's been some changes, and I know John Jang, who's often been here with you, talking to you, is no longer with us here. And next week, things are changing program-wise, and you will still be with us on a different show in the afternoons. But I did want to give you a chance if you wanted to mention anything about John, who you also had the pleasure of talking to for the past couple of years.
Yeah, and thanks for that opportunity because, you know, both Sat, you and John gave me a shot as a regular radio spot, regular radio guest, back when pretty much nobody knew who I was. And I can't thank you guys enough. And both of you, you know, Sat and John, have been just incredible to me over the years. I love coming on with you guys. I have family members that listen to this hit every single week, and they just love the way that the three of us would interact. And, you know, John is just a great guy, great human, and he's been so friendly to me both on air and sort of behind the scenes and sort of helping me along the way. And so I think the world of him. He's such a class act, and I can't wait to see the next act of his career.
You got it. We feel the same way, and we look forward to chatting with you again and on a different way as well. But we appreciate your time. We look forward to the future as well.
Sounds great, guys. Thanks so much for having me on. Have a good one.
Thanks,
you
Mark.
Got it. That is Mark Schofield, one of the good guys in the industry. And as far as you know, us giving him a chance, in
what's
many ways.
To come? Way to pull back the curtain there?
Slightly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Next week will be fun. Hey, I just realized today's the last day.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, you'll be on air tomorrow.
I will be here, but you'll be here. You're off tomorrow.
Yes. Tonight. Today's the last day. I'm on from 9 to 1.
Yes.
Starting on Monday, I will be on from 4 to 7 with Andrew Walker on the program moving forward, and I'll still be doing the Canucks game, so it makes it easier for me as far as transitioning from working afternoon drive and going to the Canucks games.
It's going to be a blast next week, but as far as what's been an awesome 26 months here from 9 to noon. This is technically the last one.
Where the team is together one way or another. Mm-hmm. And it'll be a different version coming up next week.
It'll be
and
like Rick Astley, together forever.
Yeah. And honestly, I can't say enough about how much fun it's been to talk to everybody during this time slot and what we've been able to create with you.
And we'll see you in the future at 4 o'clock.
Yes, of course. And Bick's not going too far away. Bick will still be here at noon starting next week because you will be co-hosting Canucks Central at noon with Scott Rintoul starting on Monday as well. So, Bick, you're not moving too far away. You won't be here 9 to noon, but you will be here from noon to 1.
Y'all better get used to me.
Yeah, we got to deal with this. We got to deal with Bick and his football and hockey knowledge.
My weird quirks of singing Europe Final Countdown at random times.
the random little things that we do.
I'm not going to do it.
We're going to hear from head coach Travis Green on the other side.
Yep.
What are his thoughts ahead of tonight's game between the Canucks and the St. Louis Blues? We'll also get back to a lot of your reaction, a really good point, and a question from JCast on Twitter about Tyler Myers. He kind of mentions on Twitter, I've noticed a couple times he has looked off the simple play, trying to make a more complicated play. Is that something he has to watch out for? I have a theory on that, and we'll discuss right here on the home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650. Some Pink Floyd on Throwback Thursday. Great Gig in the Sky by request from Scott in Calgary.
TBT.
We give you if you ask. If you ask, you shall receive.
You don't
even
need to ask nicely. You just have to text it in. 650-650 Subway text line.
Yeah. You know, our good friend Eric chimes into our Subway text line and says, y'all suck. Change sucks. We understand. We get it. Do we have a song?
Maybe we should play Bowie Changes later.
Yeah, maybe we do that. This is our request. We'll see if...
Yes.
So, by the way, as far as nicknames for Roger Shergrill, we got one from Vikings Dad.
This is going to be great.
What do you think about this one?
Have you seen it?
I have not, no.
You should read it, Vic.
Why?
Because I just think you should.
DJ Maharaja, the Sultan of Spin. That's too long.
It's too long.
Yeah, it's too much of a mouthful.
I do kind of like DJ Maharaja. DJ Maharaja.
Good one, yeah.
DJ M, and then you just go with DJ M.
Yeah.
Not bad. Maharaja, I mean, it's kind of taken. It's a nickname that's taken by, you know, WWE superstar Jinder Mahal.
Yeah, okay.
Former champion, right. But maybe, yeah. You know, I'm the champion of...
The champion. Oh, look at
didn't
you.
He win you. In controversial manner?
I don't know, man.
Or did he lose in... I thought you were the big wrestling guy.
It was so long ago. It's been like...
It was like last year!
It's a long time.
Does the belt change over a lot of times in last year?
I think so, it has. Yeah. I think Brock Lesnar has it again.
Kofi Kingston? Was that the guy?
No, Kofi Kingston lost it to Brock Lesnar.
Oh, just at the recent...
Mm. Correct, yeah. Last SmackDown.
I see the tweets. Man, I know what's going on.
We got this text message. Oh, man, I got to listen to some Pink Floyd now. Yeah, I'm a huge Pink Floyd fan, and a big reason for it is my dad. I've been to four Pink Floyd concerts. I have not seen David Gilmour and Roger Waters together. It's always been Roger Waters. Roger Waters, The Wall, a couple times. I saw Dark Side of the Moon with my dad at Rogers Arena. This is like... maybe 15 years ago, 14 years ago, something like that. So
they still do tours?
Yeah, I think Roger Waters had something recently. The Wall wasn't that long ago. I took my dad to that concert a couple years back.
7 years ago?
They've had two Wall concerts here.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So big fan of Pink Floyd. So if you send in Pink Floyd requests, you do get those played. So yeah. Leaf Hater Steve chimes back and go and change it. Ben Blast. Okay, yeah. Why the heck are they messing with the perfection? Every time we like something the way it is, they go and change. It's
Ouch.
Been a blast. Leaf Hater Steve. But hey, things change. Things evolve. And we will have new things that might interest you as well moving forward. And sometimes, I understand, we are creatures of habit. And I understand Eric as well. I mean, when you're used to listening to a certain show at a certain timeline, and you're used to it, and you invest... And the way you guys have invested, we appreciate it and we understand it's difficult to see that change happen, and your routine does change to some degree, but sometimes things evolve and the evolution could end up being better down the road. So hopefully better things to come, different things to come, and we will entertain you and speak with you and find ways to connect with you. And no matter what time slot we're going to be on. So we appreciate it. We understand the frustration as well. We thank you for hanging in, and we appreciate your thoughts, good or positive or negative or whatever. Send in your thoughts. We always appreciate it.
We're here to listen.
We always are. We're
You're here to, here to listen, but we are here to listen to you.
Okay. All right.
See me working? You see me working?
I see you working. We have a fantasy question. We'll do some more football talk a bit later in the show. 11:30, we'll do some fun quarterback panic index.
Plus 130 later today.
Yes.
Start him or sit him.
Yeah. All right. We have a question from my friend The Rocket on Twitter. We'll throw this by you a bit later well. The Rocket. At underscore Pavel Bure. Yeah, that's my good friend.
Oh, nice.
The Russian Rocket, believe it or not.
Is it the? No. I'm not going to go there.
Not quite. All right. We're going to hear from head coach Travis Green coming up in a minute here. Just meeting with the media ahead of tonight's game between the St. Louis Blues and Vancouver Canucks in St. Louis. We got a question from JCast on Twitter, and it was a good observation that he made. And he says, Tyler Myers has had a good start, but I've noticed a couple zone exits where he looked off some simple passes. I hope the Canucks coaching staff tells him to keep the play simple and headman the puck out. Sometimes, yeah, it's easy to overthink the simple pass and you're trying to look for something better. But do you want to micromanage Tyler Myers a lot early this season, considering the way for him to be most successful is to take the reins off of him, Vic?
Yeah, to me, that's still rooted in the idea of you fear the mistake from Tyler Myers. And there's going to be some. Every defenseman has them. But I like that he hasn't taken the simple passes. It's trying to extract the most value out of every decision. I find in times in hockey, it can be too conservative in your decision-making that there's nothing wrong with dumping it in and chasing after the puck. But are you getting the most value out of the play? Is there something you can see that hasn't developed yet? And can you navigate space to create that next chance that's coming? It's not about making, you know, the right play. We talk about this in basketball all the time. Make the extra pass, right? Find the open guy. Mm-hmm. That kind of hasn't happened in hockey to some degree. And I think that's going to happen. Now we get all these new creative players, all this young development. These kids are so smart at playing hockey now. And I think we're going to see that. We see with Quinn Hughes, when he enters his zone, doesn't always go towards the net or towards the goal line. I'll cut this way because a new lane is going to open up that hasn't emerged yet. And then there's the pass. It's finding ways to maximize opportunity.
I found that when Tyler Myers was asked to keep things simple more and do the simple things, you took away so much more of his upside.
Mm-hmm.
And it goes back to what you just mentioned. We have to reframe the way we view defensemen in today's NHL. Mistakes will happen, but if you have a player that is offensively minded, is gifted with finding the open seam, skating the puck out, making plays, you almost want to encourage that to the point where some egregious mistakes will happen. And sometimes you do bypass a simple play because that creativity spawns more creativity, more confidence, and better play from those types of players. So I would be very, very, reluctant to tell Tyler Myers to keep things too simple, because I do think that's one of the reasons he wasn't at his best in Winnipeg, because they put too many reins on him. And for a guy who needs to be more free-flowing to be the best version of himself, I would be very careful to not coach that out of Tyler Myers. And there is a fine line, right? Like, you don't want to be taking away a very simple pass out that leads to a rush because you're trying to do something way more complicated. That's something obviously you talk about, but I would be very reluctant to say just keep things simple to Tyler Myers.
There's been moments where he's just held onto the puck for a little bit longer, and it's just a new lane has opened up because opponents have collapsed on a certain passing lane, and another one emerges, and he's got the capability to find these lanes and hit these guys in stride. It's one of the things I've liked from Meyer so far. I hope it continues. He's been one of the best surprises for this Canucks team so far.
Right, and I like this take here. From Christopher Stuck in Traffic, I'm glad you're listening to us and we're keeping you company while you're stuck in traffic, for our 650-650 subway text line. On making a simple play in the last game, even with the team winning, I was getting frustrated watching players just ship the puck out of the zone and not make a pass and turn it over to the other team repeatedly. Winners don't take the easy way out all the time. It's frustrating and boring to watch a team do nothing but dump and chip, and that's Travis Green's style, or has been Travis Green's style in the past. Is it Travis Green style, or is it also a product of what you can do? Because I know last year, they were trying to get their defensemen to make plays, and then halfway through the season, they just kept giving the puck up. I mean, how many times did we see Eric Erbranson hold on to the puck behind his own net for like 10 seconds, 15 seconds, trying to make a pass, and it would be a turnover, or he'd just flip it out just because he couldn't make it? And in the past, the Canucks just did not have the blue liners on this team, or healthy blue liners at that big, to make those plays, to rely on them to rush the puck out or make good passes out of the zone. So it just became chip it out or lift it out of the zone. I don't think that's the way Travis wants the team to play right now. And if he does, then he needs to reframe what he wants for this team.
And that's part of this new season for Coach Green. Just, we're going to learn about him really for the first time because there's an NHL roster, let alone on the defense. What does that look like in the offense? I agree that there was a lot of dump and chase the last 2 years, but I think that was a function of the talent that was on hand. You coach what's in front of you. And if he felt, even though it's a suboptimal game plan, it's what the players on this team can execute. I'm not going to complicate things for these players because it's going to look a lot worse than it already was last year. And for... you could make an argument they overachieved last year.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and JCast does mention, he follows up and says, some passes Myers has looked off, head manning it to Pettersson or Miller with speed. I'll be watching for it.
That's fair.
If
your complaint is give it to your star players, okay.
Who have a lane, they have speed, you got to hit them. Sure, I understand that.
It's one of the things we should keep an eye on then.
Yeah. No, it's a good observation. I just, as far as keeping it simple, just from that point, and you can look at specific plays where you have missed opportunities and you have to take advantage of those opportunities next time, for sure. But just on the notion of Tyler Myers keeping it simple, I'd almost want him to go the other way. Don't keep it too simple.
Okanagan J, 650-650 subway text line. Myers needs time to develop the best decision, letting him grow into the system. There are a lot more positives than there have been negatives about his play, from Okanagan J in our text line.
All right. As far as Travis Green is concerned, he just met with the media talking about the game tonight against the St. Louis Blues and Josh Levo being back with Bo Horvat.
I just want to go back to it. I thought... Yeah, we're trying different things. I'm trying to get Bo's line going with a little more offense, and Jake and Furley might be good together as well. It could change during the game, though.
Does it say more about Levo, too, Travis, and the fact that he can move up and down your lineup, and depending who you're playing on a given night, aside from trying to get somebody else going, Levo has a lot of versatility.
When Leaves is moving his feet and hunting pucks, he's a good player in the league. And, I mean, that really is a staple. We want in all our players to move their feet and be strong on the puck. And when he does that, he's effective.
Travis, your club's scoring goals at a top three rate in terms of 5-on-5 play, but your sort of big guns haven't been the ones sort of driving that offense. Is that something you see as a positive because you know that they're going to come along, or is something that you need to see more from them?
Well, I see it as a positive that we've won some games without our so-called top players scoring 5-on-5, and I believe they're going to come and start to score. But it's a team game, and you know, there's only a few teams in the league, I think, that really rely on their top players to do a lot of the scoring. And I think, you know, you want to have scoring throughout your lineup because it's tough. Our top-end skilled guys are still young players, and they're finding their way still.
Playing Stanley Cup champs, but I would think that, you know, you guys would be pretty excited to play them anytime. But when you're on a three-game win streak, like the... Do you feel like the mood in the room right now is good? Is it what you want to see?
Yeah, I think it's good. We're not dwelling on it or even talking about it. I know, you know, we talked about this the other day. You don't talk about how you're going to continue. You just keep playing the games and playing well. And I think we've all five games we've had pretty decent showings. I thought last game, from a team standpoint, we played a pretty solid game. We got to have another one tonight. It's playing the Stanley Cup champs. They're a good team. We're going to have to be ready to go tonight.
What jumped out at you? I'm sure you watched a fair bit of their run last spring. Is it just overall depth? Or?
Yeah, they're just a good hockey team. They've got, you look at their back end, you got 6D that are really 7 that can play and play big minutes. And the depth in their forward group, they got a good goalie, everything you want in a Stanley Cup team. They're going to be a tough team to beat this year as well.
Shen's got 5 goals in his first 5 games, Travis, and of course that's a pretty good line there. Tarasenko and Schwartz, what's the challenge facing them?
You said it, they're all good players. They've got experience, they've won, they know what it takes. They play hard. It's going to be a battle.
I suspect you would have wanted to upgrade your defense anyways, but when you saw St. Louis have the success they had, did that reinforce anything about?
No, not really.
I don't think it's a secret that, you know, most Stanley Cup winning teams have probably one of the better Ds in the league if you go back in the history of the game. And, you know, the teams that have success, they usually have, it's not just D, they have good goalies, they have good forwards. They're good teams throughout their lineup, but you look at this D and arguably it could be the best D in the league.
Travis, obviously you turned over half the bodies on that defense core over the summer through 5 games. How would you sort of rate how that's come together?
I've liked it. You know, I think they're still learning to play with each other. We've done a lot of work on our system play and teaching new guys different nuances, little details. You know, I think we're getting out of thinking mode and into playing mode. And last 3 games we've been, you know, it's nice to get results. But I thought we were really good in the Edmonton game, and I thought we could have found a way to get a point in Calgary as well. So, consistency is a big thing in the NHL, and we're going to need to have a real effort tonight to beat this hockey team.
Does that even equate to just shooting the puck from the blue line through, Travis, not overthinking? I mean, 6 goals already from your back end. I mean, it's a great start. Does that play into it, just instinctively letting pucks go as worried about?
It's part of it, part of your offense. Yeah. It's, there's a knack to getting pucks through from the point. I think there's different D in the league that have a real knack for it. And you know, it's something you can work on, but it's also, I think some D just have that knack.
Pairings have been together since training camp, and I gather you didn't just throw them together on a hunch. Right. How much discussion within your staff was there over the summer about who would play with who?
A fair amount, I think. You know, I wouldn't. We didn't overthink it. We discussed it all summer periodically, and just felt like Tanny would be good with Hughes, and Eddie and Myers seemed like a good fit, and I've liked the looks of Ben and Stetcher as well. So I don't think it was. It didn't take a lot to really come up with it. It kind of fits.
As respectfully as I can, I just want to ask, like, is everything still on track, I suppose, for Markstrom to rejoin you on the weekend?
Yeah.
That's Canucks head coach Travis Green, who oftentimes doesn't give a lot, but he said a couple of interesting things about the style of play, especially that defense, because we talk so much about what is this team's identity and when do we see the best version of this team? When do they truly come together? We've seen some good signs. We've seen some wins, different winning some games different ways. We see the defense far improved. But you know that early in the season still, you're trying to figure stuff out. That quote, though, was interesting. We're getting out of thinking mode and just going to playing mode.
We were literally just talking about the idea of how players are getting the most out of plays, and are they doing that? And I think there's some elements of, quote-unquote, thinking to that. Because when I viewed those plays that we were just talking about from that great question from JCast, I don't necessarily look at those plays of Tyler Myers holding onto the puck as hesitation or overthinking and, you know, not being ready to play. I think it's just understanding the way the wave of the play, and it makes sense for him to react and hang on to the puck for an extra second and find that next player. So there's a nice exchange there in regards to is he thinking or is he in playing mode? I view it as playing mode, and you know, there was a follow up there of they're not thinking either on the blue line in the offensive zone. Pucks are just getting through. It's really interesting to hear that quote. Think, okay, how does that work in as far as styles of play? Because you can use it all across the ice, getting out of your own zone and creating offense in the offensive zone.
That has been the biggest improvement for this team so far, is how the team is transitioning the puck from one end to the other end of the ice. And how much better can it get if this isn't the final version yet? We've seen Tyler Myers play fairly well so far through five games. Well, I mean, really well, really, when you break down the performance and also how he's fit. But at the same time, you know, teams start figuring you out as well. And if the Canucks, you know, start playing well and they go on a 4 or 5 game winning streak, for instance, and they start taking, people start taking notice around the league, how will they get defended? How do they adjust to that? There is a constant chess game that goes on in the National Hockey League as well. And, you know, kind of going back to last year, early in the season, the Canucks transition game was okay because they remember we were like, they're doing a lot of like deception plays coming through the neutral zone. They're doing some hook and ladder plays, trying to generate a transition game, trying to generate rush chances. Early on, they were able to create that. And then all of a sudden, the league started figuring it out. They put a lot more pressure on the Canucks through the neutral zone, took away those hook and ladder plays to some degree, that deception through the neutral zone. Next thing you knew, the rush plays went away. They just had to try to dump the puck out, flip the puck up, 50-50 puck, see if somebody can get a 50-50 puck. That's your best chance of breaking out of your own zone. So the next step is going to be when teams realize what the Canucks are doing and teams adjust.
How do you counter the counter?
And then do we see Tyler Myers, for instance, and Quinn Hughes, will they have the same level of success they've shown so far through five games?
And I think also that thinking versus playing dichotomy is also reflected in how willing guys are jumping up into the play. Like, think of that Troy Stetcher goal the other day. Does he do that last year?
No, probably not.
I'm not so sure, because just the way the team was coached, and you almost have to separate the messaging that may have come from last year's to what they're trying to do now. And we see the defense is more active. 6 goals here. It's been noticeable. And I think for some of the mainstays on the team, I know Myers, Hughes, Ben are obviously kind of new inclusions for the, but Stetcher, Tanev, Edler, like Tanev's goal the other day, and we joked, both D-men are in the play. Have we ever seen Chris Tanev lead a rush?
No, we almost never saw. I mean, we've seen some times where it happens, but it's like, oh, you know, that's like a super move.
It was almost by accident.
Yeah.
This was
It was a happy
planned.
Accident. Yeah. Another happy accident.
No, but like,
we figured out that maybe Chris Tanev
has some offensive upside.
He has offensive upside because he happened to play with Quinn Hughes all of a sudden.
To me, when I saw that goal, it's, hey, there's an opportunity here. Let's go. And he didn't think, Quinn Hughes is up there and I got to protect this lead and I'm the responsible. No, just go play hockey.
And it's confidence.
Yeah.
And it's the confidence in, you know, you have players that can recover, whether it's Quinn himself with his skating ability, whether it's Chris himself, or it's also the confidence in, okay, we might let in a goal, but we know we can score again.
Mm-hmm.
That's the other aspect, too, is you're not afraid of getting scored on. You don't want to play reckless hockey and stupid hockey and make mistakes and make mistakes on purpose because you feel confident. No. But do you have the confidence that you can come back in games? And if you do let in a goal, if you do make a mistake, it's not going to hurt you that much. You're not going to sit there in the bench and go, man, I really think I just cost us a chance to win this game because, man, we have a hard time scoring one goal. How are we going to score three?
Be responsibly aggressive. Yeah. It's like going for it on fourth down. Don't go for it on fourth down on fourth and 17. Fourth and one? That's being responsibly aggressive.
So you're saying the Browns shouldn't have gone for it at fourth and seven and then run a draw play? I don't know. I'm just asking.
First of all, it was fourth and nine.
Even worse.
Third and nine, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was third and nine. Draw play, whatever. But still, don't let the truth get in the way of a good example.
Stop being so salty, Sat.
Man, come on. Like it's hurtful. It's hurtful. Anyways, we'll get back to some panicking.
I didn't bring it up.
No, it's true. You didn't. You brought up a football reference, and I went to the dark recesses of my mind. It's like the text we got before. You said that you have a penicillin allergy. You found out the hard way.
I slipped into a dark place.
Yeah, and then somebody texted in and said, oh, you mean you were briefly a Browns fan? I was like, come on.
Detroit Brian did text in. He's like, I was briefly a Steelers, Packers, Saints, Ravens, Washington, Broncos fan as well. That's a lot of teams.
That is a lot of teams.
650, text message inbox, unsigned text. It's also confidence in your goalie to stop an odd man rush against you if the play goes back the other way.
That is from Rager, a good friend of the show, who texted that. And yeah, and it goes confidence in each other. It is really important to have that confidence. But that confidence, it's not like you just flip a switch and say, you know, we're just more confident this year. The reason you're more confident, you have more capable, competent players. Mm-hmm. Confidence comes with competency.
And that's kind of what we were talking to Shorty. You just like you can hear the chatter in the background. I think guys are just feeling more confident about it, and it grows. You know, a with results, but we see it. Think of them in the room.
You know what a bad sign is in any team is when the lights are off.
Silence.
There's no talking, right? Like, let's say you're a hockey team when you're not on the ice playing in a game. You know, you're silent. Like in practice, you're silent. Mm-hmm. You're kind of quiet in the locker room. Nobody's really communicating. That's a bad sign.
You kind of can't wait to get out of work.
Yeah, that's not a good sign. So if you're not, you know, when the lights aren't on, you're not communicating. That doesn't bode well.
650. Duncan chiming in. I have never been on the ice. Communication down there is key. Yeah. Being vocal. And we're not saying, chum it up with your teammates. Mm-hmm. And you don't got to be best friends, but there's a job to do. You got to work. It's the same as if you're not in your office. You know, there's got to be some inter-office communication. Emails, help each other out. You never want to go into blind into a project or something.
No, and when you aren't communicating, there's a lack of trust and there's a lack of confidence in each other. And when that happens, I mean, it's not going to translate onto the ice. It's going to translate less onto the performance when the lights are on, so to speak. So those are the markers of good things, but it's not as simple as just communicate better, be more confident, and things will happen. If that was the case, then anybody could be more confident and communicate better and have a lot more success. And the reason the Canucks are more confident and the reason they are having more success early in this season is the team has improved. How much has it improved? We find out a bit more tonight when they take on the St. Louis Blues. And as far as what Quinn Hughes has done, what has his impact been? Beyond the numbers that you see, the counting stats, goals, and assists, what is he truly doing? We'll talk to Sean Tierney coming up right here on the home of Vancouver Hockey, Sportsnet 650.
Around the league, Vegas forward Valentin Zhitkov has been suspended 20 games for violating the league's performance-enhancing substances agreement. And the Diamond, Game 4 of the ALCS goes tonight in New York. Yankees, Astros, New York looking to even the series. They'll start Masahiro Tanaka across from Zach Greinke. And Week 7 of the NFL season gets underway tonight in Denver, the Broncos hosting the Chiefs. You're listening to the home of Vancouver Hockey, Sportsnet 650.
Sultan of Spin. That one's a little extra.
Can't say it like that, though.
What?
DJ Maharaja. It's going to be DJ Maharaja.
So you got to sell it. You got to really hit those syllables.
Yeah. We need a big voice guy.
Yeah.
I don't know if you just need a big voice guy. You just need
somebody to be a big voice guy.
Some showmanship to it.
Okay, Mr. Showman. Take over. Do the showmanship.
I just did it.
Even more. You should read every text like this. Like from Duncan.
Let's do it.
Like Duncan.
Shoot,
I'm not worried
right
about Ferland. I think he's bringing confidence to the room. Is that where you want to go? Is that what you're trying to do?
That's just injecting coffee into your veins.
I am literally drinking coffee right now.
I am not... See, I'm doing your voice now.
See, I got it in your head.
DJ Maharaja! Okay, this is text from Duncan. I am not worried about Ferlin. I think he's bringing the confidence to the room. See, showmanship. He's not worried.
Not worried.
How do unworried people sound? I have no idea because I'm always...
If you're unworried...
Constant you're always, state of worry.
Yeah, if you are unworried, are you more monotone, right? It's like,
no.
If you're unworried, you're like, I'm not worried about Ferlin. I think he's bringing confidence to the room.
See, like, there's showmanship in that.
Is that what it is?
It's committing to a bit.
Commit.
To the bit.
Commitment. By the way, do you have commitment issues?
I'm committing to not answering that question.
I'm committed to not answering
I don't think so. Many other people seem to think
I do. I'm committed to the things I want to do.
I'm committed. You know what? That's a great future answer. It's, do you have commitment issues? No, I'm committed to things I want to keep around.
Yeah, I'm committed to the things that make me happy. Staying employed.
I've got space in my life for a lot of things.
But there's only so much commitment a person
can commit to.
Yeah, commit to. What's the commitment like ceiling for each person? Everybody has a different commitment ceiling.
We all have certain bandwidth we can and then once exceed.
You
get over,
and it's not like you can get an extra external hard drive and just
blue screen it. Yeah.
Sorry, reset required.
Error C4-0001.
If I need a new commitment, something else has to be decommitted.
Now it's like National Signing Intent Day.
Only so much.
Imagine if your relationships were like that. Is a bunch of significant others.
Well, yeah, because like, in a relationship, you're constantly...
The hats are laid out and you're like, I choose you.
Well, you know, this conversation has come up a lot about what do you do on a first date or whatever. Should you show your true self mm-hmm. or whatever? Isn't the real indicator of you truly loving somebody is wanting to be better for somebody?
Yeah.
That's what I was saying. I don't know. I was randomly thinking about that
right.
the other day. But it's like... We always talk about, okay, what do you do on a first date, for instance? Should you go somewhere that's very you and you're going to show all sides of yourself to not hide what you truly are and not put your best foot forward because you don't want to fool somebody into thinking you're something you're not? But at the same time, isn't the true indicator of love that you want to be better for somebody or somebody wants to make you want to feel better?
Man, it's got philosophical quick.
Right. It's like this unsigned text. Today's show is sponsored by the Cannabis Cafe.
No, it was sponsored
what
by...
What did we get in this coffee today?
It was sponsored by Shorty's restaurant there. What was it? Big Daddy's.
Big Daddy's.
I can't wait to ask Cheech about that later.
Big Daddy's. Is that like a Dave Pratt place?
How was Big Daddy's, Cheech?
Oh, yeah. We got to ask him about Big Daddy's.
He'll probably go off about it. Be like, boys, the greatest. Wow. The greatest wing joint I've ever been to.
I don't know if I want to take advice from Peter on Twitter when it comes to relationships, but we will read this coming up a bit later on. I'm not going to throw this by Sean Tierney, who is waiting on the line. You can follow Sean Tierney on Twitter as well, at Charting Hockey, or one of your top followers when it comes to looking at analytics. I'm a big fan of the work he does, and director of analytics for Bulldogs OHL. And check out his Tableau page as well. So go to at Charting Hockey on Twitter and check out his pages. It is something that you should do as a hockey fan. You always get educated following Sean's stuff. And he joins us now on the line on Sportsnet 650. Sean, always a pleasure getting you on the show. How are you, man?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me on.
It's always a pleasure getting you on. And here in Vancouver, we are all delighted watching Quinn Hughes play hockey. Only 5 games into the regular season. He's played 10 now in his career after he came up last season when his year in Michigan came to an end. But just watching this kid on the ice, he's incredible. And then you look at the underlying numbers, and it pops off. And it's only 5 games coming into the season, but is it hard not to be uber impressed by Quinn Hughes?
Yeah, I think any time you can find a young player, especially a blue liner, who can step in, take a regular role, and then not flounder, you're always sort of encouraged by that. But Quinn Hughes has kind of gone above and beyond that. Right now, just by shot rates, I have him as Vancouver's most productive player overall. He's on ice for lots of shots going in the right direction, about 64.5 for and only about 42.5 against if you break those out as rates, which is really hugely positive. It places them among some of the best players that we've seen in the really early going in the small sample size. And so, you know, anytime you see a young player step up and handle as many minutes as he's played so far and really acquit himself well, it's encouraging. He came in with a lot of fanfare too. All the prospect models really liked him sort of coming into the season. And, you know, so far so good. He looks like he's as advertised, you know, through the small sample so far.
Is he part of this evolution of the way hockey is going? We keep hearing, you know, eventually positionless hockey. We were already seeing these rover type D-mans come in. Is this showing out, bearing into the numbers that teams, because of these type of players, are able to play with more speed, more pace, and create more opportunities?
Yeah, 100%. It's definitely the way the league is trending. And so the advantage for teams like the Canucks is to identify players like this who look like they have that ability to jump in on offense, ability to read the game, pinch down low, create offense, that sort of positionless hockey that you're talking about. And when you can find a young player that looks like they've got the right instincts like that, you know, you throw them into the mix early and see what you have. And I think one of the big things that the Canucks are capitalizing on here is that we know that peak age for players is a lot younger than we used to suspect. It's probably 23 or 24 years old. And so you really want to find out with a player like Quinn Hughes, is he a player that can make a difference right away? Does he have the right instincts, and can he be part of that offensive push? And, you know, for a guy who's got a lot of offensive accolades, it really does sort of bear out in his numbers that the best offense is, or the best defense is a good offense. And when you've got the puck in the other team's zone, you're, you know, kind of playing defense by default. And so far, so good for Hughes. I think it's a super encouraging start for him.
I feel like teams right now are kind of going through a bit of an evolution when it comes to deciding how they want to, you know, like their style of play. Washington had some success taking less shots, but creating better opportunities. And then we've seen the Carolinas of the world just pepper shots. Calgary, I know that Bill Peters system wants to do that. What do you see early returns to this season of changes we might see? Is it still more about shot quality, or is it still trending towards quantity?
Yeah, well, you can see some teams have kind of found ways on both ends of that spectrum to succeed. And so the trot systems, Washington and then the Islanders now, both of those teams have done a thing where they don't mind giving up maybe a lot of quantity against, but they really work on protecting the house and trying to make sure that they're not allowing a lot of expected goals against, and so preventing that shot quality. That kind of system can work if you feel like you've got some top-end players who can really capitalize when you do get your opportunities as kind of a counter-attacking team, or a team that just sort of picks their spots with elite talent at the top of the lineup. But then Carolina's really shown that you can go the other way. They're routinely a league leader in terms of expected goals rate, but also in quantity, and it's both. They get a lot of shots for, and they get a lot of quality for, too. They do both. And for a team that's constructed the way they are, with lots of good players kind of line one all the way down to line four offensively, sometimes it makes sense to just sort of dial the pace of the game up, get a lot of quantity, get a lot of quality, and just trust that you've got the depth to kind of outrun a team over the long run. You know, you'll go through ebbs and flows where shooting percentage is kind of fluky. It goes up, it goes down over the course of a season. But I think it's really just a matter of, do you think your lineup is deep? If so, go fast. And if you think your lineup is maybe shallow, maybe protect the house and just sort of pick your spots a little more judiciously. But both can work.
So far through this early return, what teams do you find are really maximizing the way, or at least executing the way they want to play?
I think one team that's really caught my eye early on is the Buffalo Sabres. They underwent a coaching change, and it was sort of maybe a little bit of a mystery what Kruger would look to do with the lineup. Right now, they're playing at the sort of slowest pace we've seen in the NHL so far. They're only allowing about 1.5 expected goals against at even strength per game, which is league low, and it's very, very low. It won't stay that low over the course of a year. They're only generating about 1.9 or 2 expected goals for per game. So that's a really slow pace. They're below average in both. And what they seem content to do is kind of grind the pace down a little bit against the opposition. And then, you know, they know that they have a couple of real stars at the top of the lineup in an Eichel and a Skinner and a couple of those who can pick their spots and do some damage. But the rest of the time, they're pretty content to keep the game kind of, you know, lulled into a sort of sense of security And that might be smart considering the goaltending. So I've been really interested to watch how their system has played out so far and, you know, whether or not they decide that playing this kind of plodding pace is a way to succeed. It's looked good in the early going, but, you know, we'll see if it's something they keep up in the long run.
I just want to clarify something. When you say pace, is that because when I hear that, I think of, you know, how quickly you're playing, right? Do you define that by how many chances are created, or is that defined by zone exits, zone entries? Because I look at Buffalo and I think physically, like, this is a fast team. I'm curious how you guys define pace.
Yeah, I think pace is kind of murky, and I think if you're watching, you know, eye test, you might say how quickly, you know, are they moving up and down the ice? And Buffalo definitely has some of those types of players that can move quickly. When I look at pace, I'm looking at exactly as you said, that sort of rate of quality that you're creating. So how often are you generating high danger chances, and how often are you allowing them against too? Are you playing that sort of freewheeling style in terms of the shots that are happening in your game, or are you not? And despite the fact that Buffalo has, you know, many fleet skaters, Eichel, Dahlin, Ristolainen even, all these guys are, you know, sort of quick movers on the ice, they're still picking their spots in terms of the quality that they're creating. They're just not doing a lot. They're being really choosy about the shots that they take. But the real difference maker for them has been that they're really not allowing much against. And if you're looking at Hutton and Ullmark as your goaltending duo, that's something that's really smart to do, to try to make sure that they're not facing a workload they can't handle, because, you know, neither is really a sort of top-end number one guy that you can rely on.
Well, and here in Vancouver, Sean, we're trying to figure out what this Canucks team truly is. And just from a process standpoint, it looks far more favorable this year than what we've seen in the past. And one of the things that's been very curious through five games has been Tyler Myers' play compared to what we saw last season. Again, small sample size, but one of the things I'm always curious about, and I know you've talked about this in the past as well, it's usage, environment also play a big part to success for certain players, and understanding what the best version of a player is and putting him in that position to have success. So when Tyler Myers is playing a lot better here in Vancouver, I look at it as he's being put in a position to be more of an offensive defenseman, take more chances, do what he does best in an environment that is conducive to that happening, as opposed to him being maybe used as more of a stay-at-home, keep-it-simple type of defenseman. So how do you evaluate a small sample that looks a lot more favorable for a player like Tyler Myers, who was also under a lot of scrutiny when the Canucks signed him?
Yeah, so all the numbers, you know, regarding Tyler Myers coming in were really, really negative. He was sort of a negative overall impact player using, you know, metrics like WAR, which kind of sum a player up into that one number that shows their impact overall. And when he was coming into the Canucks, you know, it looked like a really big reach of a signing, which is maybe a good pun for a player of his size, that, you know, they probably overpaid for a guy who really hadn't shown that he deserved the sort of money that they were willing to pay him. But, you know, as you alluded to, the results are really positive so far. He's been a plus. He plots in the good quadrants of all the graphs I make, which means he's generating, you know, more quality and more shots for than he's on ice for against. So, you know, he's controlling that direction of the puck when he's out there. And I think there might be something to what you're saying, that the quality of teammate that you have, we've shown that that's one of the biggest determiners of your success beyond your individual ability. It's that quality of teammates. Who are you playing with? And it matters much more than the kinds of players that you're playing against, because, you know, you're stuck with your D partner every single night. And so recognizing that Myers is ultimately more of an offensive type of defenseman, somebody who you need to free up to go look for his offensive opportunities, rather than asking him to be a sort of shutdown defender protecting the crease, ultimately that's probably a smart decision. I'm still skeptical, because we have a lot of data that says that Myers isn't an effective player over long samples, but the early results are really encouraging. And so, you know, maybe this is a player that is being put into a better spot. And, you know, I think even worst case scenario, maybe we're looking at kind of an average defenseman or somebody who can soak up some minutes. And if that's what the Canucks get here, it's a lot better than I would have predicted coming into the year.
And when we start looking at what a good defense is and how important coaching is, because we sit here and talk a lot about players and this guy did not develop, and how much of that is being put in that right position. So when you look at the Canucks, the improvements they made as a team, what would be a good baseline to say this is a good team based on what we've seen so far, and how much farther they have to go for us to look at them and say, yeah, maybe they can be a playoff team this season?
Yeah, well, I think the Canucks were one that I took a little bit of heat on when I was doing preseason predictions, because I saw the lineup as having some interesting pieces kind of line one down to line three, lots of players who could probably handle some minutes, and then lots of sort of young elite players that are easy to project having gross seasons. I think Pettersson is, you know, somebody who's going to be one of those elite players in the league. Besser is a really top-end talent too. Quinn Hughes, and you kind of go on and on. This is a roster that has some growth potential built into it. And so when I was projecting forward, I kept coming up with results that had the Canucks not in the playoffs, but sort of hanging around the outside of the playoff bubble in the West, which is a lot better than I think they were being pegged by some other predictions. And so is it a team that can ultimately challenge for a playoff spot? I don't see them as a contender, but I do see them as a team that if things break right and you get good health, some development from many of the young stars that are already there, and that sort of great goaltending from the tandem. Markstrom was really good last year, and Demko looks like he could be a player in the league too. You know, if you get a few of those lucky breaks, any team can kind of be a playoff team in this league, and I was already sort of thinking that Vancouver might be in that mix, maybe in the middle of the pack there anyway. So, yeah, I'm hopeful. I can see this team as a 10 or a 9 seed, and then, you know, you get some good breaks or things go the right way, and maybe they start hanging around the playoffs by the end of the season.
Well, it would make it a lot more exciting for a fan base that hasn't seen playoff hockey in 5 seasons, if that's indeed the case. Now, before we let you go, Sean, just one thing I wanted to kind of talk to you about, and I've seen you tweet about this, and I've seen Evolving Wild, who does great work as well on social media and Tableau, talk about this too. With shots being charted a bit differently because of how they're viewing things, like, can you kind of explain to our listeners, when it comes to the analytics right now, there is some concern about how things are being mapped out. Can you explain what that concern is as we speak?
Yeah, sure. I think in a nutshell, the NHL records shot locations, and that data is really important because based on where shots are taken, we can do all sorts of statistical things. We can say, a shot taken from this spot on the ice is this likely to go into the net. We can call that expected goals. We can add those up for players or for teams, and we start to get good understandings about what kind of results we should expect over the course of a season. It's kind of the bedrock of a lot of the stat stuff that we do. Early in this season, we were getting weird results where it looked like the NHL was recording shots a few feet further out from the net than they were actually occurring. And that it can be a problem because all the models that we have that are designed to evaluate the quality of shots are based on knowing that these shots are coming from certain locations, and, you know, it just all of a sudden changed. The beautiful thing about this was Evolving Wild was a real leader here. They started talking, tweeting about how this seemed to be an issue. Some people dug back into videos looking at goals, GIFing plays where the shot location was clearly coming from closer than it had been recorded. And all of this kind of eventually led to a report being made to the NHL, and they've commented that this is something that they're looking into to see what's wrong. So that's a huge success, especially early in the year to catch it. Last night I was following along closely, and it looks like shots are showing up in the right locations again, mm-hmm. And so that's a really great sign. Now we just hope that the NHL will go back over that first handful, 5, 6, 7, 8 games, and make sure they correct everything. It kind of affects all teams equally, this discrepancy, so it's okay to still look at team-wide trends and feel like they're probably bang on with where they should be, but we definitely want to see the data perfectly right, and I think that the NHL seems like they're looking into it, so that's an encouraging sign.
Well, that is encouraging for sure. Thanks so much, Sean. Follow Sean on Twitter, Sean Tierney, at Charting Hockey. He is a must-follow if you are a hockey fan. Thanks so much for your time. We look forward to chatting with you again in the future.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, guys.
All right, you got it. Sean Tierney. And, you know, that's one of the things that's kind of been interesting. It's mm-hmm. It's a small little thing, but it matters. When we start looking at underlying numbers, how they get charted, where they're at, like if there's a little bit off by a couple feet here, a couple feet there, it does create more static where it doesn't need to be.
All the pieces matter.
Yes.
And especially when we're heading to this era, and I'm excited for it, man, when we get to player tracking, one of the things I'm super excited for is how much does Quinn Hughes skate in a game?
Yeah.
Right?
Yes. And how much ground does he cover? At what speed rate?
And I think it's going to be an alarming number when people say he does how much in a game?
Yeah.
And we're getting to this point where fans, media crave information. We can find anything we want out in 8 seconds just by Googling on our phone. And if the NHL is embracing this, kind of the technology boon that the MLB obviously went through, the NBA has gone through, and I think the NFL kind of wants to go into, they need to work with some of the community members that are thriving
providing data, providing information to the public to consume. And so, yes, there were some discrepancies. Good on everyone to, you know, recognize a problem and come up with a reasonable solution. This was one of those times you didn't need to, like, politic about it. Be like, oh, the NHL's pushing back against analytics. They don't want us to get... No, here's a problem. Let's come to a solution. Solve. We can all move on.
There's value. And now with the deal you mentioned with the new tracking system, and that's a big part of the gambling that's happening. So
sure,
if you're creating more in-game gambling and that's becoming a bigger part of the game and you're trying to sell it, well, guess what? The odds makers, the line makers, they want the most and best and accurate information possible to be able to put their lines together for betting. So it is a bit of a selfish endeavor here too, because being more accurate, having better analytics, having better stats helps the NHL, because the investment is coming from the odds makers, really, when it comes to the tracking system, because they want the best information possible for them to be more accurate with how they put the lines out.
The last thing Vegas wants is any sort of perception of complicit of or illicit involvement, right? They are actually one of the best partners when it comes to legal issues, when it comes to like college football, NFL. They work really well with like law enforcement to say nothing is
everything's
going
above
on
board.
Everything's above, thank you. Everything's above board. And this is just, you want as much information as possible to make sure you get things right. And this is just one of those things that they are going to need to explore and get right.
Absolutely. A lot of great reaction on the conversation we had with Sean Tierney, both on our Subway text line and on Twitter. Tony Roberts says, interesting take. However, my assessment remains that Vancouver makes the playoffs, but probably not past round one, probably versus Calgary or Vegas from the look of it. But hey, Rome wasn't built in one day. And Sean mentioned that. And, you know, this is what's interesting, because there are those analytical models that are, let's say, a bit less optimistic, or were a bit less optimistic on the Canucks heading into the season. But there was a way to project growth for younger players. And Sean mentioned, if you look at Pedersen, look at Besser, look at Quinn Hughes, for instance, the impact those guys can make at the degree they can make and the improvements they can make with the other additions made, there is a way to look at this team and say, yeah, no, they have a legit chance of making the playoffs. And early in the season, it looks favorable. The question is, what does it look like over a larger sample? And Tyler Myers so far has been very good. How will that translate moving forward? But even the analytics guys, like Sean himself, he said, this is very encouraging, the start to the season.
It's a different Tyler Myers. Yeah.
Yes.
At least by the numbers and by the eye test so far, does he go back to what he is?
It's an encouraging start. How do you sustain this is the question. And the topic of environment is a really interesting one, because we talk so much about players having to do what's necessary to have success. How big of a part should teams play in that development aspect? Because Draymond Green has something really interesting to say about a teammate of his, or a player who was a high pick, didn't quite work out, and he's not blaming the player. Is he correct? We'll discuss right here on the home of Vancouver Hockey, Sportsnet 650.
He's been a plus. He plots in the good quadrants of all the graphs I make, which means he's generating, you know, more quality and more shots for than he's on ice for against. So, you know, he's controlling that direction of the puck when he's out there. And I think there might be something to what you're saying, that the quality of teammate that you have, we've shown that that's one of the biggest determiners of your success beyond your individual ability. It's that quality of teammate. Who are you playing with? And it matters much more than the kinds of players that you're playing against, because, you know, you're stuck with your D partner every single night. And so recognizing that Myers is ultimately more of an offensive type of defenseman, somebody who you need to free up to go look for his offensive opportunities, rather than ask him to be a sort of shutdown defender protecting the crease, ultimately that's probably a smart decision.
That's Sean Tierney talking about Tyler Myers, who has been impressive to start the season for your Vancouver Canucks. And looking at the underlying numbers, the metrics, and when he does his charts, really favorable when it comes to Tyler Myers. And it goes back to a conversation we've had a lot over the past couple years, how much environment matters and how much putting a player in a position to be the best version of himself is super important. The team has a huge part to play in all this. The player has to show a level of commitment, has to show a willingness to learn, and has to show an ability to perform. But then it comes down to the coach and the team as well to put that player in a position to have success. And for Tyler Myers to be the best version of himself, you have to take the reins off of him. You have to stop looking at him as a physical stay-at-home defenseman who clears the net. It keeps things simple. That's not the strength of his game.
Just because he's tall doesn't mean he has to be physical. He just happens to be tall.
And if you take that off, let's say you take that upside away from him with his puck moving ability and his offensive instincts and him being aggressive.
Kind of taking away his confidence.
Yeah, well, you're taking away what makes him good. And then he has to focus on doing the things he's not as good at. And how do you perform at an above average level if you can't use your entire arsenal that makes you who you are?
For sure. And we can go back through his career and look, it's not as if Buffalo has had great success as a team over the past 14 years. And you could say, okay, what were your circumstances there? Interesting. Let's transition to Winnipeg. They had some difficulties, obviously, getting started. And generally speaking, they created a nice culture now. But, you know, where were they when he was included there? And how do we feel about the coaching staff there? There may have been a lot more hurdles in Tyler Myers' career than we may appreciate. And I'm not calling him a Norris Trophy guy or something like that. Just the way he's been evaluated prior to coming here, could he be an outlier of situation?
He certainly could be.
In the negative aspect.
So if you look at Tyler Myers, the years he's had success, and I remember talking to somebody out of Buffalo, because his rookie season, he won the Calder.
Mm-hmm.
His second season was maybe one of his better seasons, especially when you start looking at the underlying numbers and how effective he was. And then he had a couple of years in Winnipeg where he was really good. And then in between, there were some years where it's like, okay, the numbers don't look as good. Like, for instance, last year, overall, his value. And one of the things that I heard out of Buffalo was they tried to rein him in after his first couple of years. And as soon as they started reining him in, his numbers started changing a bit. In Winnipeg, as soon as he got pushed down a bit and they had guys like Trouba, they had guys like Dustin Byfuglien playing more offensive roles, they asked him to reel it in, all of a sudden he suffered more. So anytime they try to tame the horse, so to speak, Tyler Myers did not perform as well as he can perform. So are the Canucks utilizing him the right way? And I think this season we will find out about that theory. If he continues to be put in this position to play the way he is, can he be valuable for the entire season? Because if he is, at the rate he's playing right now, even if it goes down slightly, that is a legitimate top four defenseman.
And an environment is going to play such a key part of this as well. And I know we're going to play this clip here coming up about what Draymond Green had to say. But if you can build a environment where players can look around at each other and be like, wow, that guy's getting set up for success.
Right.
What does that breed inside the room? It allows other guys to say, okay, they're using him correctly. I'll have a little bit more faith in the coaching staff. And what do we hear from Travis Green? Buy-in, buy-in, buy-in. If players buy in because they're seeing other players succeed and giving themselves opportunities to play well, changes the equation for everyone.
We're going to talk a lot more Canucks at the top of the hour. It is Canucks Central at noon. We're going to be joined by John Garrett. Cheech will join us as well with Satu Arshaw and Bick Nizar here on Sportsnet 650. But this entire conversation about environment and how to get the best out of a player and development, really, in many ways, ties into something Draymond Green had to say about a player by the name of Marquise Chris. Now, Marquise Chris was drafted by the Phoenix Suns some years back, and he was a high draft pick. Eighth overall, top 10 pick. His game did not evolve the way they had thought, but Phoenix is also one of those teams that, let's just say, they have dropped the ball on developing a lot of players. But it was interesting hearing Draymond talk about Marquise Chris, and he's not blaming the player for not developing, who's now a teammate of his on the Golden State Warriors.
I think he's been in some pretty tough situations. No one ever blames the situation, though it's always the kid. No one ever blames these shitty franchises. Just always want to blame the kid. It's not always the kid's fault. And he's getting older now, so he's not a kid anymore. But, you know, he came into this league as a kid. But it's never the organization's fault. It's always that guy. So I'm happy he's got an opportunity to show. Nobody can.
And whether it's environment or not, this season will tell us a lot about a player like Marquise Chris, who's now going to a winning environment, a team that hasn't won every single time they've been in the NBA Finals, but they have three titles out of the five tries they've been there. can he be a better version? Can he be himself in a different environment? And how much do we view that environment as being negative? You look at the Edmonton Oilers, for instance, and all the years they went through their ups and downs, and they couldn't failure to launch, it seems like, year in and year out. And no matter who they drafted, and even guys who produced, they were still very incomplete as players. Was that the player's fault, or how much of that is the environment's fault? And how much of that ties directly back to an organization and how they're trying to develop players?
Well, when an organization, also a coaching staff, it's that self-evaluation is so important. And you can kind of credit Travis Green to some degree to say, okay, this is what I have, and this is how we're going to play. It may not have been the most entertaining style of hockey the past 2 years, but he coached to what he had, right? And you're trying to extract the best versions of players with what they do well. And some coaches in any sport, football, basketball, I would say football especially, is here's my game plan, here's how I play, you guys have to conform to me, rather than looking at it in, you know, the way we kind of look at things now, the how and the why. Why do I need to get most out of this player? What is it that he does? How does he play? And can I fashion a game plan that highlights his strengths? When you have a coaching staff willing to adapt their own style of play to what they have, not just be a coach in your own style of play, like be a coach to who you have. Yes, you can have your own system, and yes, you can coach that up, but like you can't cook a certain meal when you have the wrong ingredients. Mm-hmm. And you make what's in front of you. And I think in a situation with Tyler Myers now, really interesting spot where he's just getting put in a position where he can succeed. And in general, like that was a great point by Draymond. Sometimes are players at fault? Of course they are.
Yeah,
and
I think he's, always, yeah.
I think
sure.
He's sticking up for his teammates and his NBA, PA brothers, all of that. But he's not wrong. We should be putting some of the onus on the teams.
There is always something that plays a part in it. Some guys are just so good and so wired, no matter where you put them in, you drop them in, and then they're going to excel.
Kobe Bryant was going to succeed in Charlotte. He was going to succeed in Philadelphia, wherever he went.
Elias Pettersson, for instance. You could have thrown him on, well, you could have put him back on his home planet, whatever that planet is, and he'd still dominate. But, you know, Gordy Locke chimes in about this, says, just like AV and Gillis did for the Sedins and Kessler, come up with a plan to maximize them, do the same for Myers. And he goes on to say, he commented on this before, but common in the NHL, I truly feel for Myers from day one, was force-fed, be like Chara, Pronger. You know, remember see Trampkin, remember what happened there with Trampkin, he mentions his rookie 48 points was neglected. Sometimes when a player looks a certain way, has some length, has some size, it's what he doesn't do that catches your attention. It's like, okay, you put up a lot of points, but why aren't you playing like Chara? Why aren't you like Pronger? Why aren't you punishing people? Why aren't you more of a presence?
I'm sure there are coaches, and you know, I think I'm guilty of it too, who have a vision of like the ideal way they would build a team. Mm-hmm. And you see a certain prototype of a player, like, man, it'd be so cool if we had that version of a player. And you build that player in your mind just based off measurements, right? And it's like, oh, 6'6". This is going to be great. And he can skate, and he's got this reach. And he does all the things like Chara would or Pronger would. Those are great D-men. I've always wanted to have D-men like that. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to find guys who are 6'5 and above. Well, that when you do that, you shrink everything of your player pool that you can choose from. And, okay, now I've got a handful of guys I can select from. Yeah, he's got some offensive upside, but like, so he's got to be a player, but I'm really going to coach him to do this. We'll find the player that, like, the Charas and the Prongers don't grow in trees.
No, and they're as big as trees, and that's why you don't find them as often, right? I mean, that's the thing with those guys. You don't find them that often. There's a reason they're Hall of Famers that come around, you know, once in a generation, if you want to use that term.
There is kind of a hubris in that, too, that, oh, I can fix them. And we see NFL teams do this.
With quarterbacks, happens a lot.
Quarterbacks or even just delinquent players, right?
I like that, delinquent players.
Well, like,
no, I get it. I get what you mean.
The Greg Hardys of the world who keep getting chances. Well, it's like, I can be the one to fix. No, you're valuing just the wrong traits. And you think you can rehab or recover and help someone, but ultimately you're misevaluating sometimes.
Well, and also one of the things Sean Tierney mentioned too is partner, who you play with. Mm-hmm. That plays such a big part. Like nothing influences a player's level as much as his line mate or his D partner.
We're having this conversation with Tanev as well.
Right, and Tony Roberts brings this point up on Twitter as well and says, hockey defense pairings are sports' second or third most relationship-centric in terms of affecting each guy's performance. Like with dating, a duo either works or it doesn't. Edler and Myers work both visually and statistically. Bringing it down to more of a simple form, Edler and Myers, is that a magical? Maybe overstating things, but how
magic?
But how much of this is playing with Alex Edler? Because Alex Edler and Tyler Myers have really been able to fit in well. And by the way, there's an inside joke with magic. So okay, peeing the curtain back a little bit more because Bick is just dying laughing. Let's just say degenerate gambling happens with sports guys, and sometimes that degenerate gambling happens at casinos. And there's a certain game at a casino called Ocean Magic. And a certain host, who I will be spending a lot more time with starting next week, is a big purveyor.
Forget pulling down the curtain, you just lit it on fire.
But anyways, you know, there is a game called Ocean Magic.
We have an inside joke about this game. That's what it is.
So this is a game that anytime this person walks by, got to get on the machine. And we get...
Real subtle sat.
There's always a video that comes in. Magic! So we got this magic. So anytime we say magic, that's the inside joke. And yes, that's what
we're
that's
putting
all about.
Okay, in relation to the pairing with Edler.
Yeah.
And... the interesting relationship there is like how smart they are. And this is what we keep coming back to. It's smart players figure it out, right? We're talking about relationships. JT Miller, Pettersson are going to figure it out because they're such smart players. And I think Edler in this stage of his career is in a spot where he can't just rely on his physical gifts anymore, right? He's become I'm going to go back to the word I used earlier, cerebral player, right? Mm-hmm. He knows he has to give a bit more space on the gap because he's not fleet of foot anymore. And he's thinking, how can I defend using angles more than I can? How can I defend using my physicality?
And he doesn't have to press as much to try to get the puck out because then he would expose himself and he has a hard time recovering.
Absolutely. And case in point, that goal.
Yeah. Yeah, the first goal against Detroit the other night.
He presses up the ice, tries to generate a turnover and... applaud the effort, but he puts himself in a situation where he can't recover. Zero chance to get back. I think he's smart enough to understand this is a new horse, as you said it. Don't put reins on him. He can do a lot of the legwork when it comes to joining the rush and carrying the puck out and understanding how to play with him. And I think our fear coming into this season was... oh, he's going to be, or like this pairing could be a shutdown matchup pairing. It's not going to be like that. At least through five games, it has not appeared. They're actually pushing the tempo.
Well, they're being told that when you're on the ice, even against another team's top pair, don't be worried about playing. Not to say you don't worry about your own end. I mean, that's not what happens. Mm-hmm. But it's like, play your game. And that means you guys are going to go out there and you're going to push the pace. You're going to dictate what happens. You're going to dictate the style of play when you're on the ice. And that is a bit of a change from what we've seen in the past with what's happened on that D pair as well. And when you have Edler and Tanev being as injury prone as they've been, it's been difficult for those guys to play at this level. So this pairing of Myers and Edler so far looks like a really good bet. A lot of reaction on this too when it comes to not expecting somebody to be something they're not. We got the text message here from Bobby Roode.
Really like this.
And he says, trying to force players into something they're not. You don't see Hank and Danny punching Marchand in the face. It's just not in them. Jake isn't going to be the big, bad Patrick Maroon type of player. It's just not in him. But what is Jake best at?
Mm-hmm.
He can be physical, finishing his check. He can get shots on goal. He can bring speed. But if you're expecting him to all of a sudden turn into this mean player who's going to go out there and dummy guys and constantly try to start fights and be a constant agitator, that's just not in his game.
As it stands, yeah, that's not in his game. I think a lot of people want to see him evolve into that, but it's something I've said, and I'll be consistent about it until it changes. It's... people have habits.
Yes, they do. A couple of questions to get here before we get out. Duncan mentions this on our 650-650 Subway text line. I wouldn't call it magic, but I am glad Edler is still a Canuck. We are way better than last year. Mm-hmm. And Edler and Myers, they've both been very good to start the season, not to mention Quinn Hughes, Chris Tanev, and that third pair with Jordy Benn and Troy Stetcher as well. A question from Vikingstad. You guys conjured him by saying his name. Is Trampkin here in Vancouver in a Canucks jersey by the end of March, yes or no?
No.
I believe they'll try to sign him, and I believe they might sign him, but I don't expect that he's in the lineup anytime soon because one thing, there has to be a spot. Like right now, is if he gets parachuted in from the KHL, they're not going to just hand him 15, 20 minutes. So it's going to depend on health, and number two, it's going to depend on his performance. Like, he's just not going to be handed anything. I have a hard time seeing Trampkin coming here at the end of the year and then being a, let's say, being an important part to the team. He could be a black ace if they make the playoffs. Like, he'll be there, for instance. But I'm not expecting... The only way I expect him to play games is the Canucks are out of it in March.
Sure.
And it's like, okay, let's just give him a chance, see what he has. So if you're hoping for Trampkin to sign with the Canucks, that's a possibility for him to play for the Canucks at some point this season. Let's just say unlikely.
He will be... He's kind of like the NBA's version of Seattle, where it's like... The NBA just kind of threatens. It's like, oh, yeah, we'll move a team to Seattle, move a team to Seattle, move a team to Seattle. And all these other arenas get built up because it's like, oh, good. We don't have to move you because you improved. He's kind of just like a forgotten about asset for the organization. I think the fan base looks at it. It's like, oh, one day he's coming back. One day he's coming back. It's going to be great. I'll believe when I see it.
Yeah. And well, I mean, him coming back, I can see. But then him being handed anything?
Yeah.
That's going to be the tough part. I mean, especially we know with Travis Green, how he rolls. And especially with this team now.
It was easier to make the lineup back when.
Yeah. And I just don't see him being gifted anything. He would have to come here and earn it. And last time, he didn't like the whole idea of having other guys play ahead of him. And there was a decent gripe because some of the guys playing ahead of him weren't very good. But now that there are legitimate players ahead of him, how easy is it for him to get in? How is he going to wrap his head around having to really earn a spot on this team? On the back
end.
That's
going to be a big question.
So that's going to be a big question for a big player who is still a prospect for the Vancouver Canucks. We'll get the Canucks Central at noon at the top of the hour. But there is a basketball game being played here tonight between the LA Clippers and Dallas Mavericks. And this game is going to bring some controversy with it because there's going to be pro-Hong Kong protests going on as well. So you're going to have a couple different factions. You're going to have those who are going to be campaigning for the Vancouver to bring an NBA team in. I know the Morning Show talked about that here with James Cebulski and Perry Solkowski. They talked about that extensively, about, okay, that movement to try to get an NBA team back here, that's going to happen, but there's always also going to be a political side to it as well. But I want to get away from that politics side, because not to say it doesn't matter, but for us here in this market, the big question really, for me, the most important question for us in this market is, can Vancouver get an NBA team again? We spoke to Francesco Aquilini on this show a couple weeks back, and he mentioned, well, he's not going to fork over $3 billion. It's not going to happen. If it happens, it's going to have to be a group of people. Is the local fan base, especially the younger generation, more invested than the corporate community is to
yes.
bring basketball back?
Yes. And I would say because the world's a smaller place now. Even though there's no NBA in this region, so many of our generations, that and younger, lives online. You can be a fan of any city you want to be now. It's easy to root for the Tennessee Titans because you can watch the Tennessee Titans whenever you want. Mm. It's easy to root for the Oklahoma City Thunder because you can watch the Thunder whenever you want. You can see what's going on with their team on social media anywhere. And so because of that, this generation is loving the NBA, probably more so than any league. They've made leaps and bounds as far as interacting with that generation. That you can have a following in a city that doesn't have the NBA. Even though we know there's a history here, they've generated that demand to... It's cool to like the NBA again.
It is cool, but also it is a very sound investment. Like it really is, because...
I agree with you. I believe that investing in sports in general is always a sound investment.
But especially basketball. Like, if we're projecting 50 years down the road... Basketball could be right there with soccer.
It's the safest sport to me also.
When it comes to hockey, you see the numbers aren't the same when it comes to kids playing hockey. There are a number of reasons for that. It's not cheap. There's other factors as well. There are parents now who say, I worry about head injuries. Do I even want my child to play hockey? We know football deals with that at a far higher degree than hockey does, but it is a consideration. I mean, I don't have any kids, but I talk to my friends who have kids, and you know, I've had a couple of friends tell me, it's like, I love the game of hockey. I'm not sure I want my kid to play hockey. It's expensive. It's hard. There's a lot that goes into it. And I worry about the health a little bit. Is that fair or not? There is a consideration to some degree that plays a part into it. availability, the ability to have kids to play this sport when it's not cheap, is also the other factor that's a really, really big factor for a lot of families, especially as you see in society now. It's hard to make ends meet as it is. Look at a city like Vancouver. Man, just paying your rent is hard enough because of how expensive it is. Your mortgage is hard to cover, and then you have all the other costs that go with living in an expensive city like Vancouver. But as far as investing in the NBA, if you invest, even let's say you get a group together that invests $3 billion to bring a team here, I guarantee you, Bick, in 10 years, you might double that investment.
Look where the Milwaukee Bucks were. They're laughing at how much their team is worth now because of when they bought it on the low. And I think it's a high price tag, don't get me wrong. It's staggering to even think how much it costs. But you have to look at it as a 10-year, 25-year
in this
investment.
Market, if you look at the demographics of this market, the younger generation, how much they like basketball as well, there's a lot of opportunity in Vancouver, because I still look at Vancouver not only in the corporate community, but also societally and the diverse group of people we have here. I do believe a lot of people in this market love basketball. The reason they don't listen to sports talk radio as much and watch as much sports on TV or watch, because they're like, we're basketball fans. I want to hear more about basketball. Nobody's servicing me, for instance. So if you service them, they will come. They will show up. I would be all in on investing. It's easy for me to say. I'm not forking over $500 million or whatever.
We got a big announcement, Kickstarter right now.
Right now, I'll get it going.
Sat and I.
But I just believe, I truly believe that it is a missed opportunity if the corporate community doesn't take advantage of a possible opportunity, if there was, there is one that exists, because you will get the return and this market will flourish with this. I truly believe that if you bring basketball back to Vancouver, it will be a huge, huge boon to this economy.
And I think we underestimate the escalation of sports. It's only getting bigger right now. More stations are popping up, more networks are popping up in both Canada and the States. It's only gets bigger. And if you can make a big, sizable investment now, I know it's massive, but there could be a long-term benefit for someone willing to, or a group willing to, pull off something amazing.
Yeah. Hopefully that interest is there and we see it happen. I am very skeptical, though. I think my desire for this to happen is greater than the possibility of this happening.
Our stomachs are bigger than the eyes?
Yeah.
Is that the right phrase?
Yeah. That's a good phrase. It works. All right, Bick, take a little break. We'll be back again because we are getting to Canucks Central at noon. We're going to talk about the game tonight. Vancouver in St. Louis against the Blues. How do the Canucks beat the defending Stanley Cup champions? And how was lunch for John Garrett? You'll find out right here on the home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.